Look at the air. Look at the hang time.
People always debated, who's the greatest player of all time? Dumb question. It should be, who's the greatest team of all time?
WGAG Radio.
Sorry, Showtime.
WGAG Radio.
Back to back.
WGAG Radio.
First three-peat.
WGAG Radio.
Even with the flu.
WGAG Radio.
No push-off.
WGAG Radio.
And my favorite.
Radio.
Tough to beat that. What? You think there's someone else? Prove it.
We repeat, the student should be prepared to make his or her choice of career by time ninth grade is complete. When a woolly-haired person graduates from college today, almost always the big thing he or she has in mind is to find a good job and stay on the job getting promotions until retirement from work and then good retirement pay. Any Ethiopian person should realize that working for Caucasians is helping Caucasians to oppress Ethiopians, because doing Caucasian work makes the white man richer, and if he is richer, he is stronger to oppress us. We Ethiopian scientists understand that when a person has no job of his own, he has to work for someone. But what we are saying is why working for your enemy all your active life. Let me repeat that one. We Ethiopian scientists. Go ahead.
No. That's what I was saying earlier. How, you know, when they did the integration thing, it took the great ones with good mind, rather, to keep on building the Caucasoid system up and kept on depleting their own. Because they figured, oh, I'm better than that. I'm better than them niggas over there, you know? Yeah. Go ahead, Newbie. I didn't mean to stop you, but go ahead, bro.
No problem. I'm just saying, basically, you know, most people, you know, if you're working for the Caucasian race, you're basically working against self. Because if you're making the Caucasian man wealthier or richer, then you're actually helping him oppress and repress you.
Yes.
So that's why these plans, you know, should be implemented, as well as further up where it says that by the time, you know, young men and young women reach the ninth grade, they should have an idea and should have suitable plans for them to be enter an occupation of their choosing and their liking as well. You know, in these days and times, they go through high school and even college at some point and still aren't aware of what they're interested for an occupation or even want a job at that time or prepare for that.
Right. And then that job go right back to Job or the Bible, right? To where they got you doing all this struggle and hardship to keep a job. And then that's what the whole Job story was about, is hardship. So we want all that hardship, you know?
Agreed.
Yes, sir.
All right.
Let us move on.
31. One of the prime purposes of an Ethiopian college graduate should be help build black communities to respectable and self-supporting level above the slum status. And one of the best ways for the college graduate to help to do this is to pick the kinds of subjects during attendance at college which are suitable and workable for building economics in the black communities, and after working for the Caucasian, if necessary for a while, let's say somewhere between 2 and 4 years, and having saved money enough that woolly-haired persons should go into business himself or herself. This is one way for us to equalize ourselves with other races by equalizing our communities with those of other races. We Ethiopians must intelligently control all businesses in our neighborhoods, and the best way to do this is by doing all the investing. In this paragraph, we mentioned the college graduate as an example, but the same holds practical for any Ethiopian who desires to do well for self and kind.
Indeed.
So I think that was basically self-explanatory.
Yeah, self-explanatory.
So if you have to work for the Caucasian, at least give them some time, 2 to 4 years, to the point where you can save enough money and be able to invest in your own communities,
exactly,
own the businesses and the economies in your communities.
That's right on point. It's the and then what was the key point too is what you decide to take up in their educational system.
System, correct.
Because you have a lot of people who will go in there and take and major in English,
mm-hmm,
and that can do nothing for the betterment of the community.
Correct.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that engineering, medicine, you know, those are things that will be good for the community.
Absolutely.
To come in and start putting things, placing things in effect. But we don't even, you know, the majority of us won't even think like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we out of our right mind. We don't reason. We do think that shit, but we don't reason it because we out of our right mind. That's right.
Absolutely. Even further back, it said that, you know, we have to be in charge of our education, our military, you know, our economies, our businesses, language, all those things we have to be responsible for in our own communities.
Well, because another system is set up and we've been made to think lazy, we become lazy and produce laziness. Yeah.
Complacency, yeah. Absolutely. All right.
Yeah.
32. Of course, equal education with other races for our children and adults alike is equal culture to that of other races. For us, woolly haired people to receive the same education that Caucasians get is not equal education for us, but that is Caucasian education. Education created by mentally resurrected Ethiopians is more than equal to all other educations. If the education we receive is created by others than our own kind and we do not have our own, no matter how much of someone else's education we may get, we cannot have equal education until we have our own creation. Anyone else's education in the absence of ours makes us inferior in education because we cannot use an alien education as efficiently as the creator of it.
Mm. Yeah, going in trying to play somebody else's game,
mm-hmm,
and you don't need to know the rules.
Absolutely.
Or you know the rules, but you can't master the rules because someone else made it.
It's not your rules, yep.
Yeah, you can only be a pawn. And then that's like, I'll let this one pass. Point in case, like three car Molly.
Mm-hmm.
You feel you with that game?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so it's like, if I want to let you pick the right card, you can pick the right card. But if I don't, you'll never get it. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. It's like our minds. Yeah. Let us move on.
All right. 33. In count two of the booklets, The Nine Ball, and in the topic, How to Economize, we mentioned several gimmicks the Caucasian uses to help keep us poor and unequal. At this point, in concluding this topic, we mention another one, and that gimmick is the one known as credit, is a Caucasian gimmick, which will make you overspend. And this is because You do, because you do to have to pay cash for the merchandise right then. Not having to pay cash right on the spot is very deceiving, because you still have to pay for it anyway, plus the carrying or credit charges. We should buy on credit only as a last resort. That is, if it is commodity, which you need and must have right away and do not have time to save all the money necessary to buy the item cash. Otherwise, save and buy what you need on a cash basis. This way, we buy less, save more, and become more economically equal with others and more economically independent as an individual and as a race.
D, for real. That's real talk right there.
That's a big point that they're making here,
yeah.
Because, you know, most people are buying things on credit that they don't understand what credit is about, first of all. You know, as you said here, if it's something that you really need right away, such as food, you know, clothing, shelter, then by all means, you know, purchase it with your credit. But if it's something that's going to sit in your attic for 3 years that you're not going to use, you know, and a lot of us have done this, and the interest is piling up on it, and you're owing more on it, so you're paying more than three times as much. Even if you bought it on discount, you know, it becomes a problem. And you're not being economically sound making such a decision, an uninformed decision.
Indeed.
Anything else to add?
No, nothing else to add to that, brother.
Welfare and unemployment. Capitalism is an economic system that breeds poverty, and especially for its captives and oppressed. It is the nature of capitalism to produce hardships. Capitalism survives on slavery and war. The American Caucasian could have prevented the welfare state he has created for darker people in these United States of America. But the welfare state is one of his gimmicks that help keep the captive controlled. When a person is on welfare, the Caucasian feels that he has a right to control that person's life in every way, because that person has become a beggar, thereby placing himself or herself at the economic mercy of his or her oppressor. In other words, the person has become completely dependent on the enemy who wanted to see his captive in that position in the first place.
Yeah. Self-explanatory right there.
Absolutely.
And that's what we see right now. You see them, you know, work in a public place. And they don't, if they don't put that money on that card, they trip it. Like there's no other way to get this. So, yeah. That's a major gimmick they put on us, boy.
The 1st and the 15th, right? Every month?
Yeah. Something like that. Wake up. It's the 1st of the month.
There you go.
You know, for real. That's what they do to us, bro. And it's sad that, you know, that being that it's been there, say, for 40 years, that the people couldn't link up and do something more constructive with it than where we are now. Because, you know, they're wiping it out now. But they done even put it to the point where you had three, four, five generations getting it.
Correct.
You know what I'm saying? And then that actually just weakened the people more and more and more, weakened the mothers to the point where they're like, I'll just have a baby and let the state take care of it. Then it falls on us as men to where we also will get complacent and not go out and put our best effort out to provide. Yeah. Whoa, man. And then, yeah. Go on, bro. Go on.
All right. 35. The Caucasian rejoices to see woolly-haired people on welfare or any other dependent position because how militant can one get on welfare? How independent can one become on welfare? One reason the Caucasian led such great influx of Ethiopians into civil service jobs during the last decade is because the worker has to swear his alliance and allegiance to uphold Caucasian government, which means uphold Caucasian way of life. How militant can one become who has sworn to help maintain his employer's domain and his employer is the government which is oppressing him? That is to say, welfare, civil service jobs, unemployment, etc., are Caucasian gimmicks to force the captive to cater to the whims and wills of the oppressor. One on welfare is one on his or her knees to the Caucasian. A darker person who is unemployed and wants to survive in Caucasian society is usually prone to be used against himself and his own kind by the oppressor.
I'm with you, Noob.
Big Dad, great bro. Yeah, that's cool.
You there, Noobie?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. I thought your phone dropped.
No, I'm still here. Okay.
Okay.
Let's continue.
Yes, sir.
36. The white man knows a person, male or female, is satisfied to get on welfare rolls and stay there without making sincere efforts to lift himself or herself from this condition of poverty and dependence on others who unfortunately are the person's enemy. That person is unintelligent. So the Caucasian is using the welfare state to try and romantically unite all unintelligent Ethiopians for the purpose of producing and perpetuating unintelligent offspring that the Caucasian may form a permanent slave state, because what is required for a permanent slave state is permanent slave mind, which the unintelligent have. The Ethiopian race does not need more woolly-haired people in quantity. The race needs more woolly-haired people in quality. Those who are capable of liberating self and keeping self and kind liberated and preserved.
Yeah, Newbie.
I'm here. Sorry about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
So we definitely don't want to be amongst the unintelligent.
Well, absolutely, because what he's saying, basically, we don't need more people. We need quality people. Quality people are the only ones that are going to be able to permanently take us out of this state, which is, you know, slavery, slave mind, unintelligent people, so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah. I'm with you, bro. Let's get
What's up, Nubia? That's it.
Hey, Baz, what's going on?
Bob, what's happening, bro?
What's going on, man? Just came in to join in with y'all brothers, man.
Oh, appreciate you.
Get on this knowledge train.
That's right. No.
You're chugging away. Right,
hey, newbie.
What's up?
I can't hear you. That's what
you
I was going to say.
Oh, okay.
Not loud and clear.
All right.
Can you hear him real good? It might just be my line. Can you hear him real good? And that's it.
Yeah, I can hear him, but you know, I'm speakering over here, so it's loud for me.
Okay. Is that any better?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
That's better. Okay. All right. We're basically at page 40 on the PDF. We're at the 37th verse. Another reason for the welfare state, which the Caucasian has created for dark people, is a trick of making the females of other races independent of the males of their races. And this means that the females of our race will look up to the Caucasian man as her provider and protector and the one who has all the sense. When the female knows that she can quit her husband and get on welfare, this situation provides unnecessary broken homes, which is extremely bad for raising children because there is no father in the household to do his part with and for the offspring. A responsible adult male is needed in all households that contain growing children, especially as a model for the male.
Yeah. I heard one part where you mentioned the Caucasian, the first sentence you read about, and he used a plural for the races.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that he used a plural for races tells us that the Caucasian not only is trying to take advantage of Nubian women, but also the women of all races, really.
She's correct.
And so he said that Dr. York was writing that, you know, the Caucasian is actually basically giving these women another option besides being with the man. And in that way, they take him as a man or as a surrogate, because from there, he basically takes care of them via jobs and welfare.
Taking the male role out of the household, period.
Yeah.
So that's state of affairs. 38.
The welfare, I think it's going to end up working against him, Nubi.
Okay. Expound on
I'm
that.
I'm just saying, I think that's turning around. It's about, like, you know, weed, crack, whatever they done did, LSD, PCP, angel dust to put into our neighborhood, TV, fucking heart program. I mean, we still here.
Oh, absolutely. There's no question to that. I mean, to the point where, you know, we got, you know, Caucasian boys mimicking us. They want to be rappers and dress like us, you know.
Yeah.
We've always been the trendsetters.
Yeah. I do see something extra, a little bit extraordinary happening. I don't know if you and I have been kind of witnessing it, but I have seen an improvement, like, even since just like with the beginning of this year, which has been shitty for me, but I'm just saying, like, far as other people, I have seen in the conscious community, it look like the drive is going to be a little bit stronger. I don't know if it's just me just having fucking first of the year illusions, but it looked like people are trying to put out better information for some reason.
Well, I think that's more of, you know, them not being able to suppress the information anymore. I mean, because remember now,
I don't get that.
Is there basically a house on this planet that doesn't have internet access or isn't privy to some sort of information, whether it be 100% correct or, you know, they can obtain the information. You understand? So I should say overstand. But I think that has to, you know, be attributed to what you're, you know, you're seeing right now.
But I'm saying though, when you say though, like, they always have that access to the internet. So, I mean, not always, but it's been a while that niggas been on Facebook and in chat rooms and shit like that. And I just felt like most of the knowledge was bullshit. But now I do agree with you though, when you say that, you know, like, that's one of the reasons. I do agree with that. And that they, I think, though, when I say extraordinary, I think that I think that it's a real consciousness.
Oh, absolutely. I
think that we'll be out of this, whatever they calling it, you know, as soon as people realize we ain't in shit.
Well, there's a lot of motivation,
this book written when Dr. York first, you know, 67. So this was an issue then, and it's still an issue now, but it's only an issue with human beings. It shouldn't be, I mean, not to my knowledge, it's not an issue with Nuwakians, though. I mean, understanding that concept where the cracker actually is dividing the family and taking the man out the equation of the household and actually putting himself there and giving the woman that option.
Okay.
I'm thinking that I'm seeing a trend where it looked like that's going to work against him. I don't think that what we'll be saying by saying that is that the sisters are going to take him up on that offer and turn their backs on the Nubian man. Or that ain't what we'll be saying.
I mean, you can already see, I mean, the writing's on the wall already. You can see it by, you know, just like, you know, he's saying here that a lot of the programs are being pulled back anyway, you know. There's a lot of programs that we used to have. I was just speaking to Nasser, and he was saying that, you know, a lot of the welfare and all that stuff are being pulled back. You're not getting that assistance anymore. I mean, whether it's because the state has the money at all anymore or whether they invested the money improperly, whatever it is that, whatever the motive is, you know, everybody's starting to take more responsibility into their hands because they know that if they can't do it for self, then who is going to basically do it? So, yes, you are right in that aspect. You definitely are, and I agree with that.
Yeah. We'll see, though, because he's going to build some more on this now. I mean, I can't remember everything in the book, but I do remember Don read it last time. So he's going to make some interesting points. But just everybody that's listening to the show before Nubi moves on, just realize that the word was pluralized in races. So you want to read it again, Nubi, we'll listen to it again. That was a deep point, though.
Okay, I'm more than happy to read it. Okay, this is at 30, let's start at 36. The white man knows if a person, male or female, is satisfied to get on welfare rolls and stay there without making sincere efforts to lift himself or herself from this condition of poverty and dependence on others who unfortunately are the person's enemy, that person is unintelligent. So the Caucasian.
What he said, I have to lift him up? What he said, I have to lift him up? Lift him or herself up? What did he say?
The white man satisfied to get the will. No. Okay, here we go. State without making sincere effort to lift him or herself from this condition of poverty and dependence on others who unfortunately are the person's enemy, that person is unintelligent.
Mm.
So the Caucasian is using the welfare state to try and romantically unite all unintelligent Ethiopians for the purpose of producing and perpetuating. You see what he said there?
Yeah. Yeah, but it's expound. Cause this, to me, there's some deep shit right here.
Absolutely. Well, he's basically saying that he is encouraging people that are unintelligent to get to basically perpetuate, to get offspring, so that they will remain in their system permanently, in that state of mind, that slave state, that unintelligent state. That's what he wants to happen. He wants these mentally dead people to keep procreating so that his system can continue.
Yeah, that's why I was saying, like, I do feel like it's a consciousness shift, and the word consciousness in this instance would be equated to intelligence, a rise in intelligence. Now, I'm not saying overall. You know, my number is 144,000 out of 7.2 billion people on the fucking planet. But I do think, I do see certain things that's raising up for us. So that's a
you know what? I'm glad you said that, because you said 144, but we're looking for 144. But in the beginning of my tablets, my issue, it says that the 144, then he added the numbers up, and he made it a 9. And he basically made it the 9 people that possess 9 mind. Is that the same one you have, or?
You said, is it what now? The last part?
The 144,000. He added the 3 numbers up in the beginning
I
of
heard
my holy tabs. Are you there?
Okay. Yeah, I'm here.
And he made
it
number 9.
But yeah, that's what time it is. I know what you're talking about, but I think it'll be an interesting piece to add to the show if you got your tablets right there.
Oh, man, you have to give me a minute. Hold on. Give me 2 seconds and go get it. Is Nasir still here?
I'm still here. You know, I'm at work. Every now and then, I gotta mute my phone when people start coming in.
That's what time it is.
I'll be right back. Bill, for like 10 seconds. Let me go get it. Hold on.
All right. Yeah, hey, Don. Babylon.
Brothers.
Excuse me. We got another mic that's open. We got a 972-639. Your mic is open.
Peace. This is Trinity. I was just getting in. Hey.
Trinity Storm?
Hey, bad.
I don't think we can hand clap tonight, but we're giving you a hand clap anyway. Shout out to Trinity Storm. Hey, what's up? What's up, Tahuti? Bruh? Is that right?
Oh, pardon me there, man. What's good with everybody there?
Hey, what's up, fam? Hey, I just wanted to speak to you, man.
Oh, right on, right on. Yeah, it was just, you know, I seen another hand was up, so I let the sister in and whatnot. But how's everybody doing? It's what y'all to continue on doing what y'all do, man. We're here. We got y'all back.
That's what time it is. All
right.
So we're glad you brought in Trinity, man. That's some good feminine energy on the line. You had anything you want to add or bring to the table, Trinity?
No, appreciating the read. I'm like the brother that shared that this part is very interesting, especially when it said that the people in the welfare state are romancing being militant, you know, at this point.
Yes.
So I'm just really listening, and it's about emancipation, you know, for us. I believe that's what this text is bringing out for me, and you know, personally, to emancipate from the system. Yes. So thank you.
Well, the words he used in the book is liberate.
Liberate, okay.
Yeah, now he may use emancipate. I don't remember seeing that in the book, and I know he's a very choicy person about words, and I know the word emancipate, I don't, you know, according to my definition, I don't think he would use that, but what I do know is that he uses liberate. So, his book is about liberation, because the liberation forces are non-ether forces. I think you're familiar with non-ether and all that stuff, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah. Yeah, that it's definitely about liberation of our people and giving us mind over matter principles.
Right.
Yeah, using our minds to do what we want to do and do what we have to do and not looking so much all the time to the physical. Yeah, but you back, Newbie?
Yeah, I'm back. I was just looking through the actual index here in the front to find what I was talking about.
I had a question, Babylon.
What's going on?
Hey, Babylon. I had a question.
Hey,
but
what's up?
Just,
who is this?
This Roz in Reno.
Okay, what's up, Roz in Reno? What's going on?
Nothing much. I had a question, but I think I found the answer already. The last time we were doing this, we were talking about sun knowledge and liberation knowledge. But as I read on, because I thought it was going to list 9 different knowledges or something like that. But anyway, I read on throughout the rest of the book, and I saw that it was about the 9 Nubian guides. So once I found that, I think I kind of answered my own question.
Okay, but what book are you talking about once you read on in what book? This book right here, The Nine Ball?
The Nine Ball, uh-huh.
Okay, and you say you thought it was going to list 9 principles, but it turned out to be
9. I thought it was going to list 9 knowledges because when we first started reading the book, the first couple of weeks, it mentioned the sun knowledge and liberation knowledge.
Yes.
But we didn't touch on the 7 other different knowledges. What I thought was going to be 7 more different knowledges. But as I read on, I saw that it was the 9 Nubian guides is what it was.
Oh,
not necessarily 9 different knowledges broke down. Right.
Okay. Well, I can tell you this, that this time around, I don't have that book in front of me, and I don't have it on the PDF on my phone. So I'm just listening in. But that's an interesting point because I've never read this particular book all the way through. I've only heard bits and portions of this book by Dr. York myself. So even though this is a very old book, this is a rare book. People that had this book wouldn't even share this book right here or let nobody hold it long enough to read it because they knew how important it was. And now I'm seeing for myself, well, I've been new from the parts I did read how important it was, but I'm getting to hear most of the book. So when we get to that part, I hope you're on the line so you can, you know, direct us in the angle what you're talking about so then we could build on that. Because had I known you was looking for nine knowledges, I would have been looking for nine knowledges because I wasn't even thinking about it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Now that you mentioned that, though, that may be something to look at because now I'm really going to want the book on PDF because it may be nine knowledges. It may be nine, you know what I'm saying, principles. Even if they ain't just put out as in a list, he may list nine different ways. Now, that seems like something he would do.
Okay. Yeah, that was the question that I would have for Dawn, but I know she got some things going on. So I just thought I would ask you. But like I said, I eventually kept reading and I found the answer.
Yeah.
Because that's what I thought it was about. You know, I thought it was going to list, because like I said, we spoke on the sun knowledge and liberation knowledge. And so I thought there was seven more knowledges coming after that, but that's not the case.
Yeah, but you said sun knowledge and what else?
It was sun knowledge and liberation knowledge.
Okay, well, I can already tell you another knowledge he mentioned in the book. He mentioned nine knowledge.
Nine knowledge, right.
Okay.
Nine knowledge.
So that's three of them.
Mm-hmm. That's
so
three.
If you give me, so you know what I'm saying, I'm gonna get the PDF. We're going to work this thing out. Let's find these nine knowledges, or these nine principles of knowledge.
It turned out to be nine principles of knowledge, I think. Because you're right. It said nine knowledge, sun knowledge, and liberation knowledge.
Yeah, and then don't forget, the knowledge of all knowledge is right knowledge.
Right knowledge, okay.
So then now we have four.
Now we got four.
And if we got right knowledge, you know we got wrong knowledge. And he did mention that in the book, wrong information and wrong knowledge. So now we at what? Five?
Now we at five.
Yeah. So I ain't gonna try to do nothing else. I'm just gonna wait and listen to what Newbie say. Then we'll figure out these different principles. But I know those are in there. I know we read over those. Those are the ones I can think of.
Okay.
All right. Hey, Nubi, if you can't find that theme, man, ain't no big deal, man. But she just came in and confirmed it for you anyway because she just said exactly what you said. She said instead of it being nine knowledges, it turned out to be nine people at the end of this book. And that's the same 144 or nine that you're discussing, those nine people right there. That's the exact same nine people.
Okay. So we're picking up from 36?
Yeah, I'm with it.
So the white man knows if a person, male or female, is satisfied to get on welfare rolls and stay there without making sincere effort to lift himself or herself from this condition of poverty and dependence on others who unfortunately are the person's enemy, that person is unintelligent. So the Caucasian, somebody's background.
Okay. Somebody's background a little loud. Y'all might want to mute your background.
Is that me?
Yeah, I think that's you, Nessa.
Okay. I'm muting now, bro. My bad.
All right.
Okay. No problem. Come back in, Nessa.
So the Caucasian is using the... So the Caucasian is using the welfare state to try and romantically unite all unintelligent Ethiopians for the purpose of producing and perpetuating unintelligent offspring that the Caucasian may form a permanent slave state, because what is required for a permanent slave state is permanent slave mind, which the unintelligent have. The Ethiopian race...
Can I ask, between races,
you know, in the Nubian race, in the Ethiopian race, are there different cultures? Because I listen to Dawn when she shares about, you know, some motherfuckers are like, look safely, you know. And I used to think that was harsh. But I look at it today, and, you know, as mating with that type of individual, a culture, you know, there's cultures within a culture, you know, within a race. So who's a motherfucker other than who's not? You know, I'm not that ignorant not to know. I'm just asking, you know, do we acknowledge that, you know?
Acknowledge what now? Exactly. Acknowledge what exactly?
Within.
Well, see, now, I could tell you this. When Dr. York uses the word Ethiopian, this is a great question. I think he already touched on this subject, but he mentions it in the book. When he mentions Ethiopian, he means those people with curly, wavy to curly to what they call kinky or kingly or nappy or knotty hair. And dark skin, melanite. That's all he means by Ethiopian. As a matter of fact, he has an etymological word that he gave us for Ethiopian, and it was ether utopian. So that's what he talked. That's who he's talking to, the ether utopians. He ain't even talking to your average person, really. He's talking to those people who have given up the slave mind, because a person in the slave mind can't do none of the stuff that he's talking about in the book. You got to be that broke the religion spell, and broke the spell of the white man, and broke the spell of going to work, and broke the spell. I ain't saying quit your job. I'm saying just broke the spell of needing and having to, and ain't even trying to think outside of that. I think Newbie touched on that earlier about like a 3 or 4 year plan to get oneself out of these situations and dealing with these people like this and have your own.
Okay, Newbie, so I apologize. I'm a little late. I got here a little late.
No, I mean, what you said was on point when you mentioned about the Ethiopian. I mean, that's on point. That's a great question, because a lot of people may think, especially listening for the first time tonight, may actually think that we're talking about Ethiopian people in Africa. And that would be a grave mistake, because that's not what we're talking about at all right here. That's not what he's talking about or who he's talking to. He's talking about Nubian people in London, Nubian people in America, Nubian people in Africa, all of us of sound mind and sound body and sound spirit, all of us with right knowledge, right understanding, and right reasoning, sound right reasoning. This who he's talking to. So this is not just your average Ethiopian. He's talking to ether utopian people, people who ready to start the utopian lifestyle, ready to take back their godlike qualities. So that was a great question. So that give us a chance to tell everybody what a real Ethiopian is. Because the cultures and the things that you was touching on, you're right, they got many cultures. You got Ethiopians that speak Arabic, that call themselves Muslims. You got Ethiopians that speak Amharic, that call themselves Jews. You got Ethiopians that speak English, that just don't get down with none of that and call themselves modern. So all of these cultures, you're right, in Ethiopia alone, let alone the whole of the continent of Africa, but just in Ethiopia alone, you have all these different factions or different parts, and that would be Ethiopian culture. Today, all of those would really make up Ethiopian culture, but what true Ethiopian culture would be what we're reading right now, which would be behind the nine ball, which would be this way of thinking, not what we're reading. True Ethiopian mindset would be the way that Dr. York is laying out how we should feel about other races, called white racism, how we should treat each other, what our chances are of being free, and what should we do in order to be free. Now, I ain't talking about from physical change. When I say free, we all know I'm talking about the mental bondage. Just the fact that we even use their monetary system and use their roads and don't have our own and use their court system to resolve our problems tell us that we are being babysit, that we've been controlled, and that we haven't thought of something that would wake our own people up where that system would no longer exist over us. We haven't graduated to a level of information or equalized, because had we graduated to a level of information and equalized, there's no way you can keep yourself in bondage. So if I know what you know and I got the same key you got, then you really can't lock me up.
Right.
The only way you can lock me up or do something. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm glad you're breaking it down, because, I mean, you guys know I still do some astrology. You know, that is the thing that actually freed me in the beginning and allowed me to let other people and places and things off the hook, because I understood the energy. I'm well versed with other, I want to say, cultures. You know, my ninth house is booming, you know. And when I go outside my race, it seems like that is when I'm not necessarily the luckiest or the light, but therefore what I'm saying is, going outside the culture or even within the culture, there are other aspects or concepts that I can, in other words, everybody can't be broke up in here, you know, and I need to be able to utilize my gifts, you know, and that's one, a gift for me, you know, going not necessarily outside into like the white race, but maybe within the Ethiopian race, but to other cultures. That's all I'm saying. I'm trying to get in where I fit in.
I mean, I think I understand where you're coming from. I don't see nothing wrong with that mode of thinking, if I heard you correctly, you know what I'm saying? Like, where you saying that you need to deal with some people that may be considered foreigners, but those ain't foreigners. Those people in Ethiopia right now, though, those Nubian people with nappy hair and dark skin, ignorant or intelligent, those still our brothers and sisters, for real. When we say liberate, we talking about liberate them too. But see, I tell you this, you know, and this is an unspoken word. This is my own personal view on the situation. We here in America, the Nubians here in America, we have a special opportunity. I think that our information has been different than other people from around the world over the years. I feel like we've been privy to certain information and technologies that even if the Japanese and the Chinese put out some new shit and they put their shit out before our shit come out, I still think that the American population is driven to be at the forefront of making shit popular. So the shit that's in China and Japan anyway don't really become popular worldwide until it becomes an American marketed thing. And these crackers get their hand on it. They the best at marketing. They the best at TV and commercials. So this is one reason why they prosper. So when you're talking about doing business outside your race, then you have to be careful that one, you understand this right here, first of all, that you're not dealing with people that's counter your race. And Dr. York talks about that. Like,
well, I mean,
monetary
inside
circle.
My culture. Outside my culture, not my race, but my culture.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, outside your culture, if they have your culture in mind, even though they are different culture, and they feel the same way you feel about their culture as you feel about theirs, that you will do business with them and you don't have a problem with them, then I don't see no problem with you doing business like that. Absolutely, yeah. Do business outside your culture. That's the only way we're going to grow. If we did business just amongst each other, we would never have shit. You can know that.
Yeah.
That's called a pyramid scheme. Eventually, you're going to run out of people to support the system. So, yeah, I'm with you. Last thing, though, before Newbie move on, you should make sure, though, that if you into astrology and stuff like that, then be the best astrologist that you can be and research it the way you research anything else. Because there's a lot of fake astrologers out here. And, you know what I'm saying, just you don't want to be a fake or a phony or giving information that you ain't researched or even not doing your own thing intuitively. I think the best psychics or astrologers
are people who do things intuitively. At least they don't have to go and mishmash with Hindu knowledge, Kabbalah, Kundalini, and mix all that up, then New Age movement, astrology, and then come tell me they're giving me a reading. And then I don't know if you ever heard the shows where we actually talked about the numbers, and that's another show. I'm going to let him move on with the nine ball, but just the numbers concerning astrology and stuff like that, the days of the year and the calendar and how it's measured and how they measure 365 and one quarter and all that shit. Like, where does the 5 1/4 days come in at in the astrology? If astrology based on 360 and it's 365 and one quarter days in a year, then what does astrology say about the 5 1/4 days of the year? And how does that affect my chart and my reading? And how does that affect the numbers overall? And why isn't that accounted for? So how can you be accurate? You see what I'm saying? So these things have to be worked out. And I ain't saying that they can be, because we now know 360 and 361. We know that Dr. York got a book out called Teacher's Guide to Learning the Language, with a lot of information on calendars and astrology and the names of the dates and the names of the signs, Cancer, the real name for it, it's out of time, just different things like that. And so if you get check out that book, I'm sure you can get it from Don. Don Nicoleone right there at All Eyes on Egypt. So you could call Don or speak to Don and ask her about that book, The Teacher's Guide, and that'll give you some information on astrology. And then once you do that, I'll be willing to talk to you any day of the week to help you build an astrology plan based on right mathematics, based on 361 and based on 13 and instead of the regular 12 and different things like that.
Okay, I'll do that.
That's a bit.
Thank you.
Okay, newbie.
All right, taking over. All right, the Ethiopian race does not need more woolly-haired people in quantity. The race needs more woolly-haired people in quality, those who are capable of liberating self and keeping self and kind liberated and preserved. Another reason for the welfare state which the Caucasian has created for dark people is the trick of making the females of other races independent of the males of their races. And this means that the females of our race will look up to the Caucasian man as her provider and protector and the one who has all the sense. When the female knows that she can quit her husband and get on welfare, this situation provides unnecessary broken homes, which is extremely bad for raising children, because there is no father in the household to do his part with and for the offspring. Responsible adult male is needed in all households that contain growing children, especially as a model for the male offspring.
Yeah, the independent part is interesting, because he said that the Caucasian helps them to become independent of the black man,
mm-hmm.
right, or of the mate.
Right.
So, you know, a lot of songs came out, like by Beyonce them, by the what up, Destiny Child them, and even TLC, lot of songs was coming out about independence and, you know, can you pay my fucking telephone bills and all of this stuff right here, and I could do it on my own. And these
mm-hmm.
songs or music is some of the stuff that they allow to come over the radio waves, and they approve and fund. The Caucasian is what I'm talking about when I say they.
Mm-hmm.
They approve and fund and back this music and these songs in order to project this image and to project this mentality onto our, not only the older women, the women of Beyonce's age and stuff like that, and TLC's age, but for the younger women, the younger girls as well. And this is what's going on. So and it also happened to the black man on rap music and how they project that image into him and tell him
mm-hmm.
how to be too. So this, you know, I just wanted to give a real life example of how somebody is working against us within our own culture, within our own race, and using somebody of our own race as a face to mislead us into thinking that's how she did it. when Beyonce wouldn't be Beyonce if that was her attitude in order to get where she's going.
Well, check it out, y'all. Just want a good announcement. We got 15 minutes, whatnot, before we go into overtime. Don't forget, call in or Skype things. Y'all can go ahead and keep on. I ain't going to interrupt y'all.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. You know, they're trying every way to, you know.
I just want to put on record that Welfare came before Beyonce song. That's all I want to put on record. Let's just put that shit on record.
It sure did. It sure did.
Okay, let's just put that shit on record. I believe it was songs that came out like The Cleanup Woman. It was songs like It's Cheaper to Keep Her came out when Welfare was established. As a matter of fact, it was songs that came out called Woman to Woman, If You Ever Been in My Shoes. You would have done the same thing too. I'm longing to you, woman to woman. As a matter of fact, there was another song that came out.
Fit it right.
Called Goddamn Cheating in the Next Room. And Respect. That's right, Galactic Scientist. Respect. R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
You know, I'm too young to remember all that.
I forgot you were born in the 90s. I forgot you grew up on Destiny's Child. But if I'm not mistaken, the song that made them bitches go number one was Bills. Can You Pay My Bills? Then maybe we can.
I mentioned that already.
I mentioned that. We're through some more shit. Some shit.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. You mentioned Bills.
I mean, but I do see what you're saying, and I do agree. I mean, that's still more programming or downloading, even during those song periods of time.
Damn,
it was just
we
what they wanted to come over the airwaves.
Conversation. Every time we get to 37, Welfare, Unemployment, on 9-Ball, we say I say the same shit come out my mouth, you say the same shit come out your mouth.
Okay,
I can't remember
having the conversation.
I'm telling you, man, it's the same shit, yo. We about to have the same conversation.
Okay, tonight, I can't remember it. Usually I can say, yep, duh, you're right. But I can't remember having
it. It's the same conversation because when this part came up, you know, you focus on the independent. You focus on the songs. I swear, if somebody could grab the
I mentioned
the
Beyonce
ball,
too,
we did
done.
Last
then.
Year.
I mentioned Beyonce done.
Yep. And the song, Independent,
no.
I-D-E-N-P-E-N-D, what is it? She got her own. But see, that's not Welfare, though. Those songs were talking about a bitch that is able to take care of her fucking self. It didn't say, I got a Welfare bitch, and that bitch is independent. Those songs were saying this hoe got her own job, own house, own car, own this, got her own that. It didn't say that. In the bitch get food stamps.
Okay, I see what you're saying. So could you give us an example of what Dr. York talking about when he say that the cracker promotes the independence
of the
white? You
too fucking slick, nigga. You just too fucking slick. Don't you fucking do that to me.
I just asked you, okay, I digress.
No, you're not digressing.
I'm
fucking progressing with that damn statement. I don't even, where y'all at, 39? 38?
I don't even know.
When he mentioned.
We're about to go into 38. We just came up
okay,
with
okay, so you're in 37. Another reason for the welfare state, which the Caucasian has created for dark peoples, is the trick of making the females of other races independent of the males of their races. And this means that the females of our race will look up to the Caucasian man as her provider and protector and the one who has all the sense. I totally agree with that. When the female knows that she can quit her husband and get on welfare, this situation provides unnecessary broken homes, which is extremely bad for raising children because there is no father in the household to do his part with and for the offspring. And responsibility, a responsible adult male is needed in all households that contain growing children, especially as a model for the male offspring. Where the independent come in at? You must have was still talking about a part previous.
Yeah, you read it when you first started, huh? You mentioned independent when you first started. First.
Oh, yeah, making her.
Yeah,
okay. Another reason for the welfare state, which the Caucasian has created for darker peoples, is the trick of making the female of other races independent of males of their races. And
yeah,
this means that the females of our race will look, yeah.
Yeah, and then the last.
I mean,
part,
I agree
though,
with that. Yeah, you're right. I mean, so I can't give you a song like you was mentioning. I can't give you a fucking R&B group that's out that was advocating this shit. But I can say that I always said if there wasn't any welfare, if in other words, what would a woman say in order for her to depart from her husband or quit her husband, like he say, because we do say, well, you know, well, Nick, but first of all, let's do it this way. The only reason why the Caucasian knows to use that that trick on females, and let's say of our races, fuck the elder ones for now, is because, and I will tell you why, because he know it's going to hurt your feelings. He know that the only way that a woman would feel threatened when in a sense of dependency is when the man doesn't treat her fairly when it comes to money. He knows that because he does it to his own bitch. Thus, he created a system where once your ego steps in or your breadwinning big chest comes in as your head of the household, it's your money, it's your this, that, and the third, it gives us or sends us a signal by saying, well, fuck you, nigga, and fuck your money. If all else fails, motherfucker, I'll go to fucking welfare. Fuck you and get my money there since it's all your shit and you all fucking head now. Because for some reason we feel like the men in our life don't play fair when it comes to them dead hunkies in our face and say, don't I take care of you, Apollonia? Haven't I been good to you? And shit like that over a dead hunky. So it's kind of like iffy, but I know that this motherfucker knows the trick because I don't really think that it's the Caucasian, really, even though Jews are Caucasians, but I think it was the Jew that basically set that system in place where all men of other races will always feel like he can control her with money. So a system is set up for the homes to be broken by her saying, well, fuck you. I'll go get it somewhere else, whether it's welfare or child support or anywhere else, which does break up the house. But like I said, the home ain't broken up from the outside. It's broken up from the inside.
Okay.
And the name of this topic is welfare and unemployment. But that's what I say, because I've been in those situations. You know what I'm saying? I've been in those situations where the first thing come to my mind is, fuck you, nigga. I'll just go goddamn, I'll leave your ass and get on fucking welfare and start my life from there without your little bitch ass. I've had those thoughts.
Until we go back to him for that dick, and then we want to sing that song,
are you good? It's for that good jug.
I ain't never heard no song like that before. You know what I'm saying? But I've had that. I've been in that situation. But that's, again, that's a teenage situation. I was a teenager on welfare. When I was married, I just left the nigga. Went to school, became a lawyer, and then a judge. So I prevented the whole welfare shit. I wasn't even gonna, you know what I'm saying? I knew, you know, how to wither my way. But he used this conversation or this part as an adult motherfuckers, husband and wives. He didn't say mates, boyfriends and girlfriends and baby mamas and baby daddies. This statement says, when the female knows that she can quit her husband.
Yep.
That's some legally married type shit. This ain't baby mama, baby daddy living together and they don't work out. This is like a union he's talking about. This is a fucking marriage. I don't think that shit applies to us. It applies to married bitches. Yeah. I'm excluded. But he used the word quit her husband, though. You see what I'm saying, Babylon? When the female knows that she can quit her husband and get on welfare.
Absolutely.
This situation provides unnecessary broken homes. Because realistically speaking, this is 1967. Now, bring it up to date, we already know that ain't but like 20% of fucking niggas in America is married. That, and everybody else got different baby daddies and baby mamas that's in a relationship with, you know, with somebody. This shit is a little bit different.
Yeah.
Everybody got somebody, child, in the house that ain't theirs right now. Just about.
I agree, Don. I mean, yeah.
But he did say this, though. A responsible adult male is needed in all households that contain growing children, especially as a model for the male offspring. He says a responsible adult male is needed in all households. And that's fucked up. That's so fucking fucked up because we have 95% of just adult males maybe in the house, but not responsible adult male in the Nubian family or the Ethiopian, whatever fuck you want to use today. But to have that responsible adult male in the house is needed. That shit is whoa. Where the fuck is that shit at?
The Nubian are do you guys talk about the prison system as well?
Hell nah. We ain't talking about the prison system. We talking about in the household. We ain't talking about prison.
I mean, but that's where the males are. I mean,
we don't know. No. That's not. If that's the case, then your daughter would be pregnant now. So we know that it's a whole bunch of niggas out here.
Well, no. What I mean is my experience from being a welfare mom at 16. Having a son and growing up in this system, especially in Texas, one of the things that when he became of age, 13, he's very tall. He was tall, very dark skinned, very melanated, huge. He was a threat to them. They would always tell me, "Oh, he can't be here." I remember going into treatment, and some of the women have been raped. Your child can't come with you. It's like, well, where is he going to go? Well, okay, he can come as long as he don't start trouble. Well, okay, I'm screaming at him. Okay, sit down. Be quiet. Hush. Where the fuck else is he? His mentality today, the only fucking home that he really has is that motherfucker that they're revolving fucking door. And that's the TCJC, whatever the fuck that is, I think. And I'm going to take it a little deeper. Some of them places... I put this on everything I love. It looks like they have ox over them motherfuckers. Not the one with the palace. but they're just the one with the womb. It's a comforting fucking place. It appears.
Okay.
I'm just talking about the welfare state and being liberated from it, you know. Excuse me for being so emotional about that shit. I get emotional.
No, ain't no problem.
It's okay. It's, they say a lot of women are emotional. But it says, and I quote again, a responsible adult male is needed in all households, not a male, not a adult male, a responsible. The overall topic of this particular portion of Nine Ball is welfare and unemployment. So to have a responsible adult male in the house so that she wouldn't ever have to be, so that she wouldn't fall for the tricks of the Caucasian race, and so that she won't look at him, the Caucasian race, as her provider and protector.
Yeah.
It's to make sure that there's not just a male in the fucking house, and not just that his license say 30 or over 21, but he has to be responsible. Because we got to ask this question, and let's just deal it on a 100 percentile question. If 99.9% of black women are on welfare, let's say that 99.9% of them bitches got a nigga in their life too, and we all know that. But it doesn't mean that he's a responsible adult male, because if he was a responsible adult male, 99.9% of black women wouldn't be on welfare once she get one. But these bitches are choosing these irresponsible adult males, and she's still on welfare. Because only a responsible adult male, this bitch will have to give up welfare because there will be no need for it now. She can actually go back to Mr. White Man and say, you can take this shit and shove it, fuck nigga, because I got a responsible black adult male in my life. But she knows she don't have one, so she keeps the fucking welfare, and she lets this nigga use her as a fucking toilet stool and drink all the children goddamn Capri Suns and shit up and fruit of pebbles that she get from welfare. He eat that shit up. That's what we're talking about here. Because I ain't met a responsible, I have not met a bitch on welfare that has a responsible adult male in the house. Because if the bitch did, she wouldn't be on welfare. Again, because the responsible adult male will be a master of economics, a master of employment, and a master of maintaining the goddamn household with her while there are growing children in the house. She just got that nigga for herself. These niggas are not it. She want a man, but she don't want a responsible man. That's all this shit is about. She want a man, but she don't want a responsible one. And she make us look bad. Because if she had a responsible, see, like I said, man, if a bitch on welfare with no nigga, good. But bitch, you on welfare with a nigga, you got the wrong nigga. You got the wrong nigga. You should be single mother on welfare. But not a single mother with a nigga and on welfare. That shit don't go hand in hand. That ain't even mathematically correct. That's what he's saying.
Yeah. Come on, baby.
That's what he's saying right here. when the female knows that she can quit her husband and get on welfare, this situation provides unnecessary broken homes, which is extremely bad for raising children because there is no father in the household to do his part with and for the offspring. A responsible adult male is needed in all households that contain growing children, especially as a model for a male offspring. We ain't talking about niggas in jail. We don't give a fuck about the niggas in jail. If he was a responsible adult male, he wouldn't be in that bitch. And if I'm not mistaken, I've read the nine ball before, but correct me if I'm wrong. I don't even think the motherfucker talk about prison in a whole fucking paragraph on that shit. This ain't about them motherfuckers. This nine ball.
I don't remember hearing that either.
Nine ball is not about you as a fucked up motherfucker. It's you with at least 90% of your fucking intellect. And all you need is five more to get that shit right. Nine ball ain't for a motherfucker on Dubai Street and on the corner can't get it right because nine ball is not for you. You wouldn't even be able to wrap your mind around this shit we reading if you on Dubai Street and on the corner can't get it right. You got to cross the street first and start from the goddamn Christ series and God series and all that other and breaking the fucking spell series and right knowledge series and shit like that first. Because nine ball, he said that motherfuckers wasn't ready for it when it came out in the fucking 60s. So he held this shit back because he already knew even the motherfuckers that was maybe 25 and 30 our age in the 60s couldn't wrap their mind around this shit.
No way. Mm-mm. All right.
Not when that shit started off with 6 ether and 9 ether. Not when it starts off with chemicals and gases and universe and new words like Leviathan and Zodiac. The chat room is back open. I apologize, y'all. Here it is right here, Chong. But this shit here is to prevent any of us from feeling like we have to utilize six ether forces. This is what this is for. This for motherfuckers who finally all got 2 feet, and if shit ever hits the fan, least we not go back and ask the devil for help. This is what this shit is for. People who have all been
members of Congress talked on Sunday about the prospect of reaching a deal to avoid the
fragile ceasefire between Israel and Hamas is entering its third full day, and both Israelis and Palestinians.
Bottom line, Senator, if the president nominates Ambassador Rice to be the next Secretary of State or some other...
Supplementary question. Do you personally believe that gay people are born gay?
Impact segment tonight, the Talking Points memo.
Hot damn politics.
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 Hot damn
politics.
Hot damn politics.
Hot damn politics.
Hot damn politics.
I'm back now with the Brain Trust panel.
Brain Trust. Brain Trust. Brain Trust. Brain Trust panel.
These niggas won't hold me back.
These niggas won't hold me back. These niggas won't hold me back. These niggas won't hold me back. These niggas won't hold me back.
The Brain Trust panel.
Brain Trust. Brain Trust. Brain Trust panel.
Hot diggity damn politics.
I put that shit on everything.
Hot damn politics. Wednesday nights at 9 p.m. Only on WGAG Radio.
You catch my girl legs open, better smash that. Don't be surprised if she asks where the cash at.
Let's talk about what they don't want you to talk about.
On the Don Coleon Show, Rock Talk Radio, Monday through Friday, 12 noon Eastern Standard Time, or GeorgiaGossip.com.
WGAG Radio.
Door with the key.
deep imagination. Beyond it is another dimension, a dimension of sound, a dimension of sight, a dimension of mind. You're moving into a land of both shadow and substance, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the dawn, the Cody Martin Show.
Oh, yeah. Y'all already know what time it is. The moment that you've been waiting for. The one that you've been waiting to hear. The one that caused the call that caused the effect. Put your hands together for the baddest bitch in hell below. God, Nicole Yard.
Cologne. I'm in the love of the all, and all love is in me. I am a part of the all, and the all is a part of me. I am one with the all, and the all is one with me. I can succeed as a part of the all, and fail as an individual. I can be all that I wish in the all, as long as my wish is to stay in the all. I'm never alone. The all is, I am. The all can, I can. The all does, I do. Kaloom.
Gentlemen, you are officially tuned in to the Don Nicole Young Show. Hope y'all enjoyed that first hour. That is prime time with Don Nicole Young behind the nine ball count, three, part two. The link is also in the description on Lockdown Radio. Again, great day to all my peoples over there in the call lines that called in. The call-in number is 515-605-9828 or 425-569-5274. The phone number is also in the description on Lockdown Radio again, and also WGAG Radio, blogtalkradio.com, and also WGAG Radio on Facebook. Anywhere else you can find the number. But that's where it at, man. That's our call-in number, man. Great day to everybody over there in the after party. Hope all is well with you. Special shout-out to my man, Bingy D. Great day, Bingy. Hope all is well with you and yours. Special shout-out to my man, 720 Focus in the building. Hey, boo. Great day, Miss Hudson. Great day, Self. Got it. If I don't say it now, then I'll probably forget to say it, but happy Veterans Day to everybody who knows somebody that is, or if you are a veteran, just in case. I know that's common, but I'll fuck around and forget. Special shout-out to my lady, Sweet O'Shun, in the building. Great day. Great day to all my people tuning in, man. One time for Quincy Thomas, man. Quincy Thomas, man. Quincy Jones. Young Juve. Taekwondo in the building. Great day, Sister X. Zena also in this thing, man. Tell me everything is good with you. I don't know who else up in here, man. Throw some wands and I'll show you some love, man. It's official around here. God damn it. You know how we do it. Got dog. Look. Boom. Oh, shit. Four more days, y'all. Four more days, I got another anniversary coming up. Shout it. Don Nicole Young, been flying planes for a whole year. Four more goddamn days. I don't know what day that is. Hold on, let me see. The 14th is. Boom, boom. Boom, 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 boom. That's Sunday, shout it. It'll be official around this bitch. Be official around this motherfucker. Goddamn. Can they make him say, goddamn. Do it again. Yeah, so, shit, you know what I'm saying, I just want y'all to motherfucking, you know, just be proud of a nigga, man, show some love for a nigga, you know what I'm saying, they say niggas don't, niggas getting something to get out of that motherfucker, niggas ain't never goddamn consistent riding this bitch, mm-hmm, well, I'm about a year in this motherfucker, you feel me, mm-hmm. Four more days, baby, four more days, hell and high water, baby. Four more days, that goddamn sea level, shout the hell is you talking about? Four more days, goddamn Don Nicole Young, baby, pilot in command around this bitch. Thank you, Zena. Zena only one, like, happy like a motherfucker. I think Doc happy, too, though. Doc kind of feel a bitch. You feel me? I think Doc happy, man. I'm be talking to Doc about it. He be like, thank you so much for sharing. Like, this nigga be like that. Thank you so much for sharing. This nigga here. Anyway, man, yeah, you all tuned in to the Don Nicole Young Show. And let me see what I got for y'all. I got a few things. One in particular, a long time ago, but, YouTube Snatch page down, but it's still up on iTunes, iHeartRadio, and Blog Talk Radio, archives of all the goddamn shows. The pre-crime bill to predict crime and all that type of shit, well, from my understanding, is that these cats have already set in motion in Chicago. I don't know where else is at, but in Chicago, they have already got predictive crime, like Minority Report, QT. You got me? You know what I'm talking about? Like Minority Report. And, of course, your boy Obama signed in the pre-crime. He put in place, that was his job, put in place the pre-crime bill, a.k.a. like Minority Report. And so they've been using it in Chicago, from my understanding, okay? From my understanding, and special shout out to my man Nigel. He been posting a lot of that shit on my page on Facebook. And so it's a lot of it going on. I think I'm going to start with this one right here and work my way to the top. Oh, my bad. Now, it was also in L.A. It was also in L.A. because LAPD shut down two predictive policing programs amid public outcry. So here we go. And you can look that up. That's on The Guardian. But LAPD shut down two predictive policing programs. Predictive policing. Get it? Predictive. This is the, I'm going to use them first. That's that pre-crime bill, man. The predict future crime. You see this shit? I'm gonna walk y'all through this shit because it got real ugly, if I'm not mistaken, in Chicago using that shit. So the Los Angeles Police Department, this is dealing with the LAPD, ended predictive policing programs amid public outcry. A new effort shares many of their flaws. Documents show how data-driven policing programs reinforce harmful patterns, fuel the over-policing of black and brown communities. This was dropped November 8th on a Monday. This is under Everybody Knows. So the Los Angeles Police Department has been a pioneer in predictive policing for years, touting Avant Garde programs that use historical data and software to predict future crimes, but newly revealed public documents detail how PREDPOL, and Operation Laser, attention. The department, that ain't what it say. PREDPOL. Yeah, okay, let's do it again. But newly revealed public documents detail how PREDPOL and Operation Laser, see that? Operation Laser, the department's flagship data-driven programs, validated existing patterns of policing and reinforced decisions to patrol certain people in neighborhoods over others, leading to the over-policing of black and brown communities in the metropole. This is helping automate the harm, automate the banishment, automate the displacement that policing has always been responsible for. It also says in the documents, which include internal LAPD documents and emails and were released as part of a report by the Stop LAPD Spying Coalition, also suggests, the report by the Stop LAPD Spying Coalition, that's what it's called, Stop LAPD Spying Coalition, also suggests that pledges to reform the programs amid rising public criticism largely rang hollow. Let me do it again. The documents, which include internal LAPD documents and emails, and were released as a part of a report by the Stop LAPD Spying Coalition, also suggests that pledges to reform the programs amid rising public criticism largely rang hollow. There we go. A new program that took shape after Operation Laser and PREDPOL where shuttered bears a striking resemblance to the programs it was supposed to reform. So Stop LAPD Spying and independent experts who reviewed the document say that. So LAPD's effort to rebrand, they're not going to stop it. LAPD's effort to rebrand this predictive policing experiment mirror a broader shift in the private surveillance industry. The expert says as companies increasingly reinvent existing products in response to negative press or predicting policing, this is what they say. Rather than reevaluating their whole business model, they're just trying to reframe the value of the product. That came from Albert Fox Kahn, the founder of the Surveillance Technology Oversight Project. Surveillance Technology Oversight Project. Guess what? STOP, Surveillance Technology Oversight Project. STOP means stop. Another anti-police surveillance advocacy group, they're saying, here's how you can prevent crime by allocating officers and changing patrols and changing who you engage with, and that's going to result in the exact same outcome, end quote. Now, how Operation Laser created a vicious cycle. Operation Laser, they launched it in 2011. Operation Laser, an acronym for Los Angeles Strategic Extraction and Restoration. Got it? Laser. Los Angeles Strategic Extraction and Restoration. It got its name from what LAPD hoped it would do, extract offenders with the precision of a doctor using laser surgery to remove a tumor. Get it? So on its face, using a data-backed approach to remove a tumor may seem logical. The problem was, according to the critics and experts, that the data the program ran on was malignant. You know the fuck the word I'm trying to goddamn say around this bitch. Okay, we're in L.A. right now. I'm going to take y'all niggas to Chicago in a minute. Operation Laser used historical information such as data on gun-related crimes, arrests, and calls to map out problem areas called laser zones and points of interest called anchor points. Got it? Anchor points. So for officers to focus their efforts on, a newly established group, the Crime Intelligence Detail, worked to create chronic offender bulletins, assigning criminal risk scores to people based on arrest records, gang affiliation, probation, and field reviews. Information collected during these policing efforts was again fed into computer software that further helped automate the department's crime prediction efforts. Central to Operation Laser, such wrote Craig Uchida, the program's architect at LAPD, that's who Craig is, program architect in LAPD, in a research paper in 2012. Remember I said this was dealing with Obama, right? When did this shit come out? 2011. Now we in 2012. Your boy was still president. He was already putting that shit in place, the pre-crime bill, like fucking Minority Report. So this is 2012 when Craig, the program's architect, put that shit together. The software controversial for aiding U.S. immigrations and customs enforcement and surveilling immigrants made it easier and faster for the department to create chronic offender bulletins and put together information from various sources on people deemed suspicious or inclined to commit a crime. That's what the damn architect of the goddamn software said, Craig. But in the picture of crime in L.A., the software drew up was based on calls for service, crime reports, and information collected by officers. The documents show creating a vicious loop. This was not about immigration. They were lying. When police target an area, it generates more crime reports, arrests, and stops at that location, and the subsequent crime data will lead the algorithm risk assessment. You see this shit? I'll do it again. You see it? Let me do it again. When the police target an area, it generates more crime reports, arrests, and stops at the location, and the subsequent crime data will lead the algorithm risk assessment or data analytic tool to direct police back to the same area. The Stop LAPD Spying Reports explains that shit. Now, here we are now in 2019. So in 2019, remember, this your boy Obama. Now we're in 2019. In 2019, the LAPD Inspector General, Mark Smith, said the criteria used in the program to identify people likely to commit violent crimes were inconsistent. You see it? To identify people likely to commit violent crimes. Crimes were inconsistent. Great day, She-Doc. Documents included in the Stop LAPD spying report, as well as documents that had previously been made public, confirmed that Operation Laser, in some cases, was all but precise. Now, relying on information collected in field cards, the interview cards officers are required to fill out when stopping someone to help identify chronic offenders or areas that needed more patrolling, for an example, meant that even random stops could mark a person as a potential suspect or make them suspect to more surveillance. We told y'all, we warned you motherfucker this day. Get your heads up, that ain't a warning, but we gave y'all a heads up for the past 10 goddamn years on WGAG Radio, that goddamn for all that damn, nope, 10, is it 10? How long goddamn Obama bitch had? You got 8. 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. Yeah, 16. So goddamn 8. But this motherfucker gonna have him play. Boom, pre-law crime bill. I'm not saying that it's a horror story, it's a bad thing or a good thing. It's just the fact that these motherfuckers, like, shit. Like, y'all are doing the fucking minority report on these mortals. That's how I see it. Like, well, might as well tell some other motherfuckers about what y'all up to. Anyway, and so it's already in place. Now, let me move on. Officers will instruct to fill out the field interview cards with as much information as possible every time they stop someone. That's what the architect of the software told Wired in 2017, that he knew most of the time the cards didn't lead to anything, but it was data that went into the system, feeding the algorithm, y'all, and that's what I wanted. This is the architect of the Matrix talking. As The Guardian revealed on Sunday, whatever day, November 4th, the day yesterday, day before yesterday. Not your day, but mind you, this is November last Monday. Oh, no, Sunday. Yeah, because the day the 8th. Well, the day the 10th for you motherfuckers, but the article came out on the 8th. So, yeah, the day, 7th. But anyway, so The Guardian revealed on Sunday one of the locations that Operation Laser Tag was the Crenshaw District where the rapper Nipsey Hussle was based. Hussle had long complained about policing in his neighborhood, saying in a 2013 interview that LAPD officers come, hop out, ask your questions, take your name, your address, your cell phone number, your social, when you ain't done nothing, just so they know everybody in the hood. You see the shit? So in a 2013 interview with Nipsey Hussle, that means the officers pull up, hop out, ask you questions, take your name, your address, your cell phone number, your social security, and when you ain't done nothing, just so they know everybody in the hood. That's what he thought with his dumb man. Nissa should have been listening to goddamn WGAG Radio. He would have been calling them motherfuckers out. Y'all on that pre-crime Obama bullshit. Yeah, getting all that information, feeding it to the system, and the system is going to predict. Matter of fact, it make you remind you of, what up, Patrice, great day. It reminds you of, it ain't going to remind you niggas, because you're really not a Marvel Comics studier, student of Marvel. Zola, the Winter Soldier, Zola. It was a predictive algorithm program that predicted everything a motherfucker's going to do. So this is where we at now. okay? Even though that's movie, Minority Report was movie, but here we are now. They already got this shit in place. All right, so they feeding these, they going straight into Crenshaw, taking names, getting their fucking cell phone numbers, their addresses, and their show social. Now, the documents show that LAPD identified the site of Nipsey Hussle's clothing store. You see that? And so, you know what? Let me tell you. All right. I'm going to have to take y'all back. Let's go back to the so-called slaying of Nipsey Hussle. Are y'all there yet? And I ain't talking about the scene of the crime. I'm talking about just the whole shit, the stories that was told and everything like that. Everybody there? Everybody there? I think there was a young bitch at that time. Her name was Donna Corleone. And she said that the police was involved in killing that nigga. Now, I don't know if y'all heard other motherfuckers saying that shit, but the police had a hand in killing his ass. Okay? Sorry. It's the truth. Give a fuck what you say. Anyway, so back to this LAPD ending predictive. Yeah, yeah. Because, listen, not only that an algorithm, or let's say Minority Report, or pre-crime bill, or a fucking software. Not only you're telling us that it only going to predict if a motherfucker going to commit a crime, but it also can't predict if a motherfucker going to fuck your life up. These people running this shit. You know what I'm saying? It also can tell, just like Zola. Remember Zola on Winter Soldier? Remember? Zola on Winter Soldier, it also can predict who was born to overthrow these motherfuckers. And so they were knocking off those people by looking at their socials, their spending, studying them in their schools, following them all the goddamn way to figure out who is going to come up against us so we can assassinate them or kill them or fucking put them in traffic. And kill 100 people and that motherfucker inside the car too in traffic, just to set it up where no one can stop these motherfuckers. That algorithm pushed that shit out on Nipsey ass. You feel me? That algorithm did that. It was a hit on that nigga. Now I'm gonna move the fuck on. Back to the documents. Show that LAPD identified the site of Nipsey Hussle's clothing store, Crenshaw Boulevard and Slauson Avenue, as an anchor point due to suspected gang-related activity as early as 2016. They're lying. They're lying. The full effect. Remember they said the documents show that, right? Due to suspected gang-related, nigga, your algorithm supposed to know or don't know. When you suspect shit, that's why they did that. So when they killed the nigga, they want to say gang-related. And then, of course, niggas in the street, they paid to goddamn create a narrative. Don't believe nothing the niggas say, I'm telling you, in regard to any of that shit. To create a narrative to throw niggas off on what happens. Never listen to a nigga. First nigga that shows up on the sit-down, don't ever listen to a nigga. That's the nigga they fucking coerce. That's the nigga that they program. That's the nigga that they told follow the fucking script. Never. You hear me? Never. Never believe a nigga. Just telling you. Sorry. Give a fuck how you feel today. The full extent of the operation targeting Nipsey Hussle and his businesses remains unclear, the article says. But the documents show police efforts in the area were intense and often imprecise. Searching for a robbery suspect described only as a black man between the ages of 16 and 18. Officers stopped 161 people and arrested 10 at the intersection where the store was located in the span of 2 weeks. Thought y'all got that pre-crime bill, that pre-crime algorithm. The consequences could be severe. The information of civilians stopped in the intersection would be fed into the data system. That's why they used it. That's why they started stopping motherfuckers. Start grabbing their socials, all that type of shit, and putting it in the data system, even if they hadn't committed any crimes. Some encounters turned deadly. So in 2016, LAPD shot and killed 31-year-old Keith Bursey Jr. at the intersection, right? After the car Bursey was a passenger in was stopped by gang enforcement police investing in odor of marijuana. The officer shot Bursey in the back of his, The officer shot Bursey in the back as he attempted to flee. One of six black and Latino men to be shot by the police in laser zones in 6 month period in 2016. You hear this shit? Cliff Dorsey, a public defender of Bursey's cousin, said treating an entire location as gang-related could lead to unjustified contact with the police. Let's do it again. Treating an entire location as gang-related could lead to unjustified contact with police and criminalize people based on their neighborhood affiliation. It creates a culture of distrust where people don't feel comfortable talking to the police. When there's no trust, the community doesn't feel like their humanity is being respected. It's this us versus them mentality. Now, Fred Pohl's earthquake theory of crime. In addition to running Operation Laser, LAPD contracted with Fred Pohl. That's like your predictive programming. That's your minority report. A company that grew out of a research project between LAPD and UCLA professor Jeff Brantingham. Fred Pohl applied an earthquake prediction model to crime. The underlying theory, which the company once compared to the unproven and controversial broken windows policy strategy, was that earthquakes and aftershocks. Smaller crimes were gateways to bigger crimes and occurring in similar places. While the mathematics might look complicated for normal mortal humans, Fred Pohl said in 2014, this is when your boy Obama, presentation obtained by Motherboard, the model was based on nearly 7 years, of detailed academic research into the causes of crime pattern formation. But academics say the theory is flawed and the math the company pitched to the police was too simple to effectively predict crime. The model was essentially assessing where arrests had been made and sending police back to those locations, according to those academics. More than a dozen police departments experimented with PREDPO, including a Palo Alto and Mountain View. But by the end of 2019, both Operation Laser and PREDPO had garnered intense criticism, with skeptics charging the system perpetuated discrimination. By the time several police departments had dropped their contracts with Fred Pohl, saying there was a little proof it helped reduce crime. After 3 years of use, the Palo Alto Police Department didn't get any value out of it. That's what a spokesperson named J9 D. La Vega said at the time. LAPD initially promised reform, but ultimately shuttered Operation Laser in April 2019 and canceled its contract with PREDPO in April 2020. LAPD conceded the data used in Operation Laser was inconsistent and needed to be reassessed. PREDPO, it said, was terminated because the budgetary constraints due to the pandemic. Still, the police chief, Michael Moore, maintained the underlying principles of the program were valuable. This shit is long as fuck. Damn, this is a lot. Y'all want me to keep reading this or go to Chicago real quick? This is a lot. It's a lot of shit. All right, let's go to Chicago real quick. All right, an automated policing program got this man shot, okay? Let me see. Robert McDaniel's troubles, all during Obama now, began with a knock on the door. It was a weekend in mid-2013. As he made lunch in the crowded three-bedroom house where he lives with his grandmother and several of his adult siblings, when he went to answer the door, McDaniel discovered not one person but a cohort of visitors, two police officers in a uniform, a neighbor working with the police, and a muscular guy in shorts and T-shirts, sporting shorts, graying hair. Police officers weren't a new sight for McDaniel. They often drove down his tree-lined street in the Austin neighborhood of Chicago, making stops and arrests. Out of the 775 homicides tracked by the Chicago Sun-Times in 2020, 72 of them happened in Austin. That's almost 10% of the city's murder rate, in a region that takes up just 3% of its total area. The city of Chicago puts out a heat map of where gun crimes occur. You listening? With areas of moderate shooting numbers shaded in blue or green. Red splotches represents large numbers and highest concentrations of shootings. On the map, Austin is the color of a fire engine. Still, this visit from authorities caught McDaniel off guard. At that point in time, he had nothing remotely violent on his criminal record, just arrest for marijuana, related offenses, that's it, and street gambling. And despite two officers showing up at his front door with the cohort, neither of them nor anyone else in the cohort accused McDaniel of breaking the law. They were not there to arrest him. No one was there to investigate a crime. They just wanted to talk. McDaniel says, I had no idea why these cops were here, recounting it to me years later. I didn't do shit to bring them here. He could be the shooter. He might get shot. He didn't know, but the data said he was at risk either way. You hear this shit? Pre-crime bill, baby. The algorithm. But the data said he was at risk either way. So he invited them in. That's why they showed up. He invited them into his home, and when he did, they told McDaniel something he could hardly believe. You hear me? They told McDaniel something he could hardly believe. Guess what they told him? An algorithm built by the Chicago Police Department predicted, based on his proximity to and relationships with known shooters and shooting casualties, that McDaniel would be involved in a shooting, that he would be a party to violence. But it wasn't clear what side of the barrel he might be on. He could be the shooter. He might get shot. They didn't know, but the data said he was at risk either way. McDaniel was both a potential victim and a potential perpetrator, and the visitors on his porch treated him as such. A social worker told him that he could help him if he was interested in finding assistance to secure a job, for an example, or mental health services. And police were there, too, with a warning from here on out, the Chicago Police Department would be watching him. The algorithm indicated Robert McDaniel was more likely than 99.9% of Chicago's population to either be shot or to have a shooting connected to him. That made him dangerous. And top brass at the Chicago PD knew it. So McDaniel had better be on his best behavior. Hear this? The idea that a series of calculations could predict that he would soon shoot someone or be shot seemed outlandish. At the time, McDaniel didn't know how to take the news. But the visit set a series of gears in motion. This Kafka-esque policing nightmare, a circumstance in which police identified a man to be surveilled, was based on a purely theoretical danger, was seen to cause the thing it predicted in a deranged feat of self-fulfilling prophecy. Developed in the Civil War area by developer Henry Austin, this town, Austinville, in Chicago, as it was then called, quickly grew into one of Chicago's most prominent suburbs. With easy access to the city's newly developed suburban rail service, thousands of immigrants, Germans, Scandinavians, and then Irish and Italian families flocked to the neighborhood. By the early 1920s, Austin was a residential haven for upwardly mobile families with structures designed by architects such as Frederick Schock and Frank Lloyd Wright. The densely populated suburb was defined by an easily navigable grid, tree-lined streets, parks, and narrow lots of single-family homes. Like many neighborhoods in the expanding Chicago metro area, however, the city's post-war redlining policies combined with expressway constructions in the 1960s forced a dramatic change. White immigrant families fled for better connected neighborhoods, and institutional segregation policies served to push African American families into Austin. By the 1990s, the neighborhood's residents were more than 90% black, and many of its blocks were stunted by abandonment and blight. McDaniel's block represented much of that history. The lots are narrow, and the population is almost exclusively black and Hispanic. There are no obvious abandoned properties on the North Mason, the street where McDaniel lives, but there's abandonment littered throughout the streets running parallel to it. Just about every house on McDaniel's block features a front porch where residents spend much of their time, particularly in the warm summer months. These give the neighborhood a sense of cohesion and lively social dynamic, but it helps to complicate matters when police make arrests or show up at someone's house. It's easy to keep an eye on neighbors, and according to McDaniel, people are often in each other's businesses. It was predictive policing in its purest form, all of which is to say that McDaniel's neighbors saw the cohort of officials arrive. They saw police walk on his porch, and they noticed that when they departed, McDaniel didn't leave alone with them in handcuffs. His family members and people in the neighborhood asked about the visit. Had McDaniel come to some sort of agreement with the police? They want to know why all these motherfucking cops are here talking with me. That's what McDaniel said. And you know what? So do I. A reporter for the Chicago Tribune later contacted McDaniel regarding a story about the heat list. An unofficial moniker that cops gave to the register of individuals like McDaniel, who had been identified by the police algorithm as potential shooters or shooting victims. McDaniel saw it as an opportunity to clear his name, to tell the world that he wasn't working with the police, and further, that he wasn't doing anything that should attract police attention except for being black. McDaniel had no violent history, no reason as far as he was concerned that any police officer should randomly show up to his house and declare him a threat. He was born in 1991, McDaniel is one of 12 siblings. Most of them and a slew of aunts and uncles and cousins live nearby. Growing up, McDaniel says he wasn't much of a student, and he was kicked out of multiple public schools, public high schools, for everything from fighting with other classmates to disagreeing with authority figures. He never formally graduated from high school, but has since earned his GED. He lived in his grandmother's Austin home since he was six, and while he said he has the ambition to move, he's never had the wherewithal to do so. But his own admission, he's only held a couple of jobs, working at the bodega for a friend for a few years, and then at a candy factory. Otherwise, he scraped by whatever he can. Scrap. I don't know fucking shit. You see this shit up? That goddamn boy, that Minority Report. I know what a lot of you thinking. I'm going to watch the Minority Report when this show goes out. It's another one, too. I don't know. Yeah. But I know Minority Report. Damn sure got it. And you got another movie you need to watch. It's called The United States of America, President Obama. That's that nigga, predictive programming, predictive policing, pre-crime law he put in place. This is wild, this shit. This is what they're dealing with. This is what I'm reading this shit for. This has been here, right under our nose. Let me do it. Though he never been sentenced to jail, McDaniel has previously been arrested for dealing weed and shooting dice on the street. He says he stays out of violent gang activities that might get him killed because he has a 9-year-old daughter with his ex-wife, with whom he's had an on-and-off relationship since they met in high school. With that kind of background, why, he asks, would the police put him on the list of the city's most potential dangerous citizens? That's what he told the Tribune in the summer of 2013. That's when your boy Obama put in that pre-crime law bill. I'm just going to keep saying that shit. I have no background. So what would even give you probable cause to watch me? This slow fucker didn't understand what an algorithm is when the police told him. They have an algorithm that predicted your ass going to be doing some hoe-ass shit. I have no background, so what would even give you probable cause to watch me? McDaniel told the Tribune in the summer of 2013, and if you're watching me, then you can obviously see I'm not doing anything. Chicago's heat list is an inflection point. Chicago's heat list is an inflection point in more than three decades of increased reliance on data in policing. Let's go to the 1990s. In the early 1990s, Bill Branton and Jack Maple, chief of the New York City Transit Police and his lieutenant, respectfully, began experimenting with early iterations of a database policing program. Now, if you go back to the 1990s, that's when your Minority Report dropped. Let's continue. The system, which that means if the movie dropped in the 90s, they had it for over 30 years, this predictive programming, the policing program, the data, the algorithm. You understand? Keep that in your head. The system they used wasn't so much technology. It was a tidier way to look at crime reports. Innovation by way of organization and bureaucracy. Bratton and Maple would take a horde of crime statistics and plot the locations of each incident with dots, with colored pencils and crayons on a big paper map that are affixed to a precinct wall. Then they strategize about how to reduce crimes in those specific areas, send more patrol units, maybe, or undercover cops to bait muggers. This new way of organizing crime data helped to increase arrests in their jurisdiction. Bratton, who had earned the nickname Lord Dots for his similar efforts in the Boston Police Department, eventually became New York City Police Department's commissioner. Maybe Maple became New York City's deputy police commissioner for crime control strategies and would eventually be known as the architect of the program that resulted from this new way of organizing crime data called CompStat. In the 30 years since then, computers have taken over much of the work of gathering and plotting data sets. They've also allowed police data analysts to attempt to not just identify where crime already happened, but using artificial intelligence and pattern modeling to identify where crimes are likely to happen in the future. Not Minority Report yet. Y'all not convinced yet? I'll keep going. By the time McDaniel received his visit from the cohort, the black guy, CompStat-style programs have been rolled out in police departments all over the country. And companies like PredPo have entered the game, helping officers use data to design patrolling strategies. The emphasis of all these programs was geography. If police saw a spat of muggings in and around Chicago's Humboldt Park Creation area one day, for an example, the data might show that the residential Fifth City District, southeast of the park, might be next. Great day, Seth got it. So commanders might send patrol units there. Might be next. But now the algorithm, they would trust in this computer. Policing leaders around the world have heralded place-based forecasting around the world now as essential to more efficient patrols. But there are all sorts of terrifying implications in this kind of geography or geographic forecasting for police. Forecasting isn't magic. It's an educated guess about what might happen based on things that have already occurred. The data feeding forecasting software for police are typically built around police stops and arrests. That might sound straightforward and unbiased, but consider that the U.S. Department of Justice data show that African Americans are more than twice as likely to be arrested than white people. And if you're black, your likelihood of being stopped by a police officer can be nearly four times higher than if you're white, depending on which city you live in. That's according to Stanford Open Policing Project. Building a forecasting model around data like these can run the risk of stigmatizing an entire population. And that's based on discriminatory data. A 2017 study from the Journal of Statistics and Public Policy found that arrests doubled in a quadrant of Los Angeles where its police department tested forecasting software. Here it is. Another problem exacerbated when forecasting programs do not disclose their sources of data is that of dirty data being mixed with more straightforward crime reports. In 2019, study out of New York University's AI Now Institute identified jurisdiction where inaccurate or falsified records were directly fed into the data. Chicago's one of them. Hear that? They feeding the algorithm some foul-ass shit to knock motherfuckers off, which is all to say that forecasting can put entire populations at risk of over-policing, excuse me, same word, policing and policing, same fucking shit. which is all to say that forecasting can put entire populations at risk of over-policing, which has led to countless unnecessary police killings for relatively insignificant infractions. Think George Floyd, Michael Brown, 12-year-old Tamir Rice, Sandra Bland, Philando Castile, Walter Scott, 13-year-old Adam Toledo, this year in Chicago, Alton Sterling, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery. The list goes on. All these niggas is famous. After years of shock homicide numbers in the 90s, CPD, Chicago Police Department, began its first CompStat program in 2003. The following year, Chicago had fewer than 500 homicides for the first time in nearly four decades. Whether or not the decrease had anything to do with the CompStat, Chicago Police Department received attention as a police force that saw real results after instituting a data program to focus patrols on crime hotspots. In 2006, Chicago PD began enlisting community members to assist at-risk youth. So there was momentum when the city to expert with data and community programs to fight crime. What if the data is wrong in the case of McDaniel? Huh? What if the data is fucking wrong? What if the algorithm is fucking wrong? What if the minority report is fucking wrong? What if the pre-crime law that fucking Obama put in place is wrong with this fucking AI trying to predict the motherfucking shit? What if it's wrong? And we know it's wrong. Even they fact checks and this bullshit is wrong. Even YouTube is fucking wrong. All this shit is fucking wrong. They predicting whether or not you're going to buy the fucking shoes that you just saw or not. Or they make you buy the fucking shoes. Because they shoved it in your fucking face. Algorithm. In the late 2000s, Chicago initiated a program that would take a step beyond geographic forecasting. The emphasis of this new program, listen to the date, which got its start in 2009. Who was president? Pre-crime law. As soon as that nigga walked in that bitch, he was ready to sign that pre-crime law. All right. This emphasis of this new program, which got its start in 2009, was people, specific people. It wasn't a neighborhood crime forecast. It was predictive policing in its purest form, 2009, boys and girls. At the time, only one other police department in the country had attempted to use people-based predictive technology. The Los Angeles Police Department. We just left there, didn't we? I took you there first. How they did that shit with Nipsey and all the rest of them motherfuckers. They was grabbing all information over there on Crenshaw. Social Security. Stopping motherfuckers. And feeding it to the goddamn algorithm. Now, so we in 2009 right now, boys and girls, with your favorite president, Barack Obama. Set this shit in motion. Oh, niggas. Now, we in L.A. now. At the time, only one other police department in the country had attempted to use people-based predictive technology, the Los Angeles Police Department, which went with a more straightforward chronic offenders list. Part of a broader database LAPD program, they called it Operation Laser. It would identify people with seemingly habitual contacts with the LAPD, which I read earlier, with the goal of finding a list of offenders. According to a review of the program sponsored by the Bureau of Justice Assistance for LAPD officers to proactively seek out. The phrase predictive policing gets thrown around a lot, but its original concept wasn't about putting dots on the map or trying to forecast where to send patrol cars. It was about figuring out who would commit a crime before they actually did it. It was, in quote, pre-crime, envisioned by Philip K. Dick in his 1956 science fiction novel, The Minority Report. I need a cigarette. I need to smoke two at the same time. I just can't believe this shit. I can believe it, but people are so busy looking the other way. You love the devil because he gives you nothing. Pre-crime. Now let me continue and let's hope that this dumb fucker who's writing this fucking article can tie Obama in to signing an executive order to open up the division for the Minority Report, a.k.a. pre-crime law. Predictive. Using a computer, an algorithm, an AI. Goodness gracious. All right. Shall I continue? All right. The Minority Report, pre-crime. And he literally, your boy Obama literally calls it the pre-crime bill in your face. Not to mention that the entire premise of the story. Oh, let me do it again. The Minority Report. It focus on individuals, not places, and it was science fiction. Yeah, right. Not to mention that the entire premise of the story is that such a predictive system would result in a vast impersonal engine of destruction, grinding men and women to their doom. Regardless, people on the forefront of law enforcement technology eventually began to see pre-crime person-based predictive policing as a real-world possibility. They are horrifying. There are horrifying implications here. Identifying and arresting specific people who might commit crimes go against the very principle upon which the U.S. criminal justice system is based. If individuals are arrested under suspicion of potentially committing a crime, there is no innocent until proven guilty. There's a supposition of guilt. Plus, there's just so much uncertainty in the technology. What if the data is wrong? So back to McDaniel, remember him? Popo came to his house and said, we have an algorithm that predicted your ass going to kill somebody or you going to get killed. So we keeping our eye on you, monkey. So unbeknownst to McDaniel, he was sort of a guinea pig, one of the first individuals to be put on Chicago's heat list. The Chicago Tribune published his story on August 21st, 2013, who's your president, and it gave a broad picture of the heat list and its goal to use the city's extensive data collection to intervene in the lives of people like McDaniel. It's not clear if anyone in his neighborhood read the article. You know niggas ain't read that shit in his neighborhood, which explained his confusion about why he'd be placed on the list. But it raised more questions than it answered about the heat list and how individuals like McDaniel found their way onto it. Here's what the article described. The article described a list created with the help of mathematical analysts, but it didn't go into detail about how that analyst was done. Mathematical analysis, and didn't go into detail about how that analysis was done. The fact that McDaniel, a black man with no significant criminal history, to speak of certainly no felonies, was one of the principal targets of the analysis raised even more questions. Who else was on the list? What factors was Chicago Police Department using to create its analysis? And what was Chicago Police Department doing to ensure that the list wasn't merely targeting people because of the color of their skin or where they happened to live? Well, in 2014, who's president? I spoke with the Chicago Police officials, police department officials about the program for an article for The Verge. What exactly did it mean to have cops watching individuals who may or may not pose a threat? Which cops were doing the watching? A commander in the police force eventually told me, if you end up on that list, there's a reason you're there, implying that people on the list are criminals rather than parties to violence. See that? The program was a black box, mocking the opaqueness of the operation and it seems ineffectiveness. Second City Cop, a local blog written by an anonymous Chicago police officer, began referring to the heat list as it seems as the crystal ball unit. Here's what McDaniel said. That's the Negro that the algorithm put out and said, this motherfucker here is going to do a crime and 190 fucking days. It's possible. McDaniel says that as soon as he was placed on the list, he became a target of constant surveillance by Chicago Police Department. Officers did exactly what they promised, he says, and more. Police started hanging around the bodega where he worked, looking for opportunities to go after him, often questioning his managers about his activities and whereabouts. Everywhere he looked, it seemed, there was a police officer waiting for him, ready to search, to siege. One day, Chicago police officer stopped by the bodega without a warrant. That's what McDaniel says. And the Chicago Police Department declined to comment on his specific case. According to McDaniel, police demanded that he open a safe behind the counter. You hear this? McDaniel didn't have the combination to the safe. But when the proprietor arrived, he agreed to open it. Inside, the officer found a small amount of marijuana and rolling back papers. They charged McDaniel with possession. McDaniel declined to fight it, he said, because he didn't have the money to do so. Through a spokesperson, Chicago Police Department declined to comment on McDaniel's case. They done fed that shit to the algorithm, too. So the algorithm be like, I told y'all I'm right. Fucking AI. Told y'all I know what I'm talking about. The Chicago Police Department attention didn't only serve to unnerve McDaniel and cost him fines related to the marijuana charge. Suddenly, a lot of his friends and neighbors didn't trust him. A lot of motherfuckers don't believe your story. It's no secret that snitching is condemned in communities with significant portions of their populations behind bars. But McDaniel wasn't snitching. He wasn't even being asked to do so in the first place. If the cohort who showed up on his front door was to be believed, they were merely asking him to accept help and get out of the trouble. That's not what it looked like to anyone in the neighborhood, though, McDaniel says, as cops seemed to follow him wherever he went. McDaniel found himself in a kind of worst-case scenario. Police were distrustful of him because of the heat list, while his neighbors and friends were distrustful of him because they assumed he was cooperating with law enforcement. No amount of assurance would convince them he wasn't. McDaniel became isolated. Friends stopped talking to him. Meanwhile, interest in the heat list continued outside Chicago. When the filmmakers behind the 2017 German documentary, Pre-Crime, contacted him. You hear that? Damn. The German documentary, Pre-Crime, contacted him about being in their film. He agreed, thinking it might help him to clear his name within his own community. The filmmakers recorded in front of and inside McDaniel's home, as well as in the bodega where he worked at the time. The sight of cameras and filming equipment on location in Austin was unusual, to say the least. Rather than help clear his name, the cameras only served to rekindle concern in the neighborhood about whether he maintained a relationship with the Chicago Police Department. Sometime after filming, McDaniel doesn't remember the date or have documentation to prove it because he's a dumbass. He remembers being approached by a group of men from his neighborhood, people he knew. They asked point blank whether he was a snitch. McDaniel wasn't shy about telling people he appeared on a list of likely violent offenders, but he insisted that being on the list didn't mean he had any involvement with the Chicago Police Department. He recounts, "I tell them the truth. I'm just trying to get my name off this heat list shit. I don't even know how I got on there." After that, McDaniel says he and the group parted ways. Now, take a step back and try to imagine the complexity of what McDaniel was trying to explain in that moment. The reason for cops showing up at his door was a stuff of science fiction computer algorithm that had identified McDaniel based on a collection of data sources that no civilian could gain access to as a shooter or a victim of a shooting in some future circumstance that might or might not play out. One could imagine that some audiences hearing this explanation might think McDaniel was out of his mind, a conspiracy theorist, raving about the vast surveillance state. But in a historically over-policed neighborhood in Chicago, the implications could be much more dire. How, then, did he know so much about what the police was doing? The more McDaniel explained, the more it sounded like he was an informant. But that's all he could do to plead his community. To plead with his community, he kept explaining. A day or two later, while hanging out at a neighbor's house a block away from his home, McDaniel says he got a call from someone who he says was supposed to have been a friend. The friend said they were outside McDaniel's house and wanted him to come outside and explain it again, what the story was, how he had gotten on the heat list, why people from CPD, Chicago Police Department, had visited his home, why he was now being documented by filmmakers. It wasn't high tech. Cops would just use the list as a way to target people. McDaniel agreed. But as he headed back to his house, a car pulled up. A man fired multiple shots from inside the car. One hit McDaniel in the knee, and his leg gave out. The car pulled away. Hearing the shots, the neighborhood whose house McDaniel had just left called an ambulance. The Chicago Police Department only released shooting reports if the requester can identify a specific location and date where the shooting occurred. McDaniel says he doesn't remember the exact date of his shooting, and the Verge has not been able to substantiate the details of his shooting with police documentation. They didn't even put it in there. Through a spokesperson, CPD declined to comment on McDaniel's case because Chicago Police Department is the one that shot the nigga. Gave him a warning. At the hospital, after he was shot, McDaniel recalls speaking with someone connected to the shooter. Incredulous, he asks, "What the fuck y'all just shoot me for?" The response, according to McDaniel, is, "A lot of motherfuckers don't believe your story." Later, McDaniel tells me it represented the kind of situation that he felt he couldn't escape. "I lived here 25 years. I know people, their families, their friends," he said. "1 year, I'm at your house. Your mama's cooking for me. We're on the couch chilling, playing games, smoking weed. The next, you've got a gun pointed at me." In McDaniel's view, the heat list caused the harm its creators hoped to avoid. It predicted a shooting that wouldn't have happened if it hadn't predicted the shooting. As the heat list continued to operate, researchers tore it to shreds. A 2016 paper published in the Journal of Experimental Criminology came to some troubling conclusions about the list that had by then been rebranded as the Strategic Subject List, SSL. Among them, the individuals on the SSL were considered to be persons of interest. They keep changing the shit, but it'd be the same shit to the Chicago Police Department, meaning that McDaniel's description of being routinely targeted for surveillance and researches match what researchers discovered. Let's stop there. Interesting that motherfuckers were following this nigga everywhere, but they were nowhere to be found when he walked out the house, came up to the car, and got shot in the leg. After being asked about that film shit. Your Chicago police did that shit. There was no predictive, let's do it again. Overall, the report goes on, there was no practical direction about what to do with individuals on the SSL. Little executive or administrative attention paid to the pilot, and little to no follow-up with district commanders. You hear this shit? No, you don't. Y'all have no idea what the fuck. I have no idea what the fuck you're listening to. What up, Easy Does It? It's a lot. This shit ain't even over yet, is it? God damn. Wait, that's L.A. L.A. did it to your boy, Nipsey Hussle. All that area where he's at, and also to Nipsey Hussle. All right, back to McDaniel before I get the fuck out of here. The heat list wasn't particularly predictive, it turned out. It wasn't high tech. Cops would just use the list as a way to target people. You see how they're trying to wash it down? There was another problem, too. Not long after RAND researchers performed their heat list analysis, Chicago was in an uproar. The October 2014 shooting of Laquan McDonald by Chicago Police Department officer Jason Van Dyke and raised huge swaths of the city's population. When the Chicago Police Department released a video of the shooting after more than a year of delays by public officials, all bets were off. Months of protests followed. Shooting spiked in Chicago by 46% from 2015 to 2016 and a remarkable 85% from 2013 to 3,500. And 12. McDaniel refuses to report the shooting to police because he says he's not a snitch and never would be. But I thought the police and all of them are surveilling your ass, even at your job and shit, everywhere, following you, everywhere you go. They should have been there to witness it. Anyway, Anthony, we got to go to Senate now. They done went to Senate on this shit, the Illinois City Senate. Oh, shit. All right, fuck, I got to keep reading. Anthony Guglielmi, going to call this nigga Anthony, who served as the department's public information officer at the time, says McDonald's shooting distracted the CPD from the heat list. Laquan McDonald happened. And the city just turned into a war zone, okay? That's what Anthony tells me. And so the focus of the department was less on, let's see what this experimental program can do, and more on, just like Jesus Christ, what do we get people to stop shooting? How do we get people to stop shooting each other? What the fuck you mean, just like Jesus Christ? The practical consideration only added to the deep condemnation that the heat list attracted from all over the country. Reporters and community organizations criticized the lack of transparency from which factors place an individual on the list. Researchers questioned its efficacy, and civil rights groups wondered how damaging someone's inclusion on the list might be to their record. Okay, in a 2018 testimony to the Illinois Senate Committee on Public Health. Rachel Murphy, a staff attorney with the American Civil Liberties Union of Illinois, pointed out that someone's designation on the heat list was not limited to the Chicago Police Department officers and officials. It is also used by immigration officials. Remember, that's how they started it in the beginning. The predictive crime law was on the immigration. Get the fuck out of here. Anyway, it is also used by immigration officials in considering whether to grant a person's application for legal status and by prosecutors in considering whether to enhance charges. A spot on the heat list could potentially get people deported or sent to prison for inappropriately long sentence. For the CDP, the heat list simply wasn't worth all the negative attention it attracted. Across the street, Los Angeles officials came to a similar conclusion. A report from the police commission in Los Angeles, a civilian panel charged with overseeing LAPD, criticized the department's person-based predictive policing program, saying that officers use inconsistent data to label people as chronic offenders. That only added to the scrutiny that LAPD's operation laser attracted. LAPD, Brass, ended its personal-based predictive policing. You believe that shit if you want to. Ended its personal-based predictive policing program in April 2020. Though the Chicago police still uses place-based predictive policing algorithms, Chicago's heat lease program ended in 2019. Believe that shit if you want to. In August 2020, back to McDaniel, the nigga that was on the predictive program in heat list, I call it hit list, the algorithm spit him out on the Minority Report. McDaniel found himself on the wrong side of the gun again. Near midnight, this is August 2020, last year. This all started in his life in 2013. Near midnight on August 13th last year, he walked into an alleyway a few hundred feet from where shooters nearly killed him years before. He was quiet, a half block from his home, checking text messages on his phone. He looked up to see himself ambushed. Two shooters in black, an attempted hit. A surveillance video from the night shows darkened figures walking through an alley, burst of gunfire, a figure, McDaniel falls into a brick wall, then slides down to the ground. McDaniel says they did it again. McDaniel says he knows who did it, but he won't go to the police. He says he's the target of violence because people in this neighborhood believe he's a snitch. But McDaniel refuses to report the shooting to police because he says he's not a snitch and would never be. The irony here is breathtaking and entirely foreseeable. The heat list may have been designed to reduce violence, but for McDaniel, he says it brought violence directly to his ass. It got him all the negative ramifications of being an informant, a snitch, with none of the benefits. He can't trust anyone, nowhere, safe. Everyone's potential threat. I got this target on my back, and there's no way to remove it. Last summer, on a searingly hot, humid afternoon, he said, I visited McDaniel at his home in Chicago's Austin neighborhood as part of my reporting. I also got in touch with a member of the cohort that had visited McDaniel in 2013. The officials who, in McDaniel's eyes, precipitated everything that followed. Charles Perry, who stood on McDaniel's porch all those years ago as a former prisoner who'd reemerged successfully into the general public, now devotes a significant chunk of his time, often without pay, to meeting up with violent and formerly violent offenders to discuss options for getting off the street, getting mental health and drug abuse help, and securing more standard forms of employment. Perry knows the peril these individuals face. When he was 23 years old, he was arrested and sentenced to 25 years in a federal penitentiary for conspiracy to distribute cocaine. Perry is now the Director of Community Organizing at Westside Health Authority, which specializes in getting people out of violent circumstances. The 55-year-old is also an assistant football coach at a local high school. When I asked if he wanted to meet McDaniel again, he gladly agreed. The meeting between McDaniel and Perry was, in other words, a kind of reunion. When they saw each other again, McDaniel didn't recognize Perry, so Perry reintroduced himself, described his decades behind bars, and suggested that McDaniel might do well to let Perry help him find work or some kind of training in the trades. But McDaniel was having none of it. To McDaniel, the heat list and everything associated with it, including the offers of help, represent the system that placed him in danger, and more broadly, has done nothing to lift him out of his circumstances, only worsen them. Perry presented McDaniel with a partial hypothetical about the risk and reward of working within the system rather than abstaining from it. And he says, let's say you have $50,000 sitting there, that if you go for it, you might lose your life or end up behind bars. Or I come to you with an opportunity to get a job to make you can make $12 per hour. McDaniel said, I don't want it. He said, I'll take my chance to make the 50 grand. Okay, Perry said, that's your choice. No, it's not my choice, McDaniel said. Look at the reality of it. I got all these problems now. If I'm gonna be evicted from my home, if I got kids that don't eat, if I got a mother that's in here starving, if I got a daddy that's in jail, your $12 don't fix that. Perry circled back. But if you miss that $50,000 sting, your problems still exist, and you either dead or in jail. McDaniel says it's worth the gamble. McDaniel was unmoved, and Perry was late for practice. After Perry left, I sat with McDaniel to hear him out. McDaniel said, at his age, I agree with him. At my age, I can't. Why not? I asked. He done lived a majority of his life. He had his ups. He went to jail. He had his downs. So now you come home from jail and you just mellow out. That's cool. That's understandable. But do you hear what he's saying? He's building his system through their system. So to McDaniel, the system represents the circumstances and people and technology that landed him on the heat list in the first place. And he says, I just can't do that. I can't trust him. That's amazing. Off of being a target on the Minority Report, that shit is amazing. This motherfucker there is fucking paranoid like a motherfucker now. You know what I'm saying? Off of that, Minority Report, y'all, it's been here. It been here, easy does it. That was a lot. I can't believe it took me goddamn an hour and 40-something. It take me an hour and 40-something minutes to read this bullshit. Well, let's go to bed, boys and girls. Take us a nap. Come back 9 o'clock tonight for Hot Damn Politics, goddamn it. That was a lot right there. I don't even know how to fucking, yo. That, Nicole, you told people about that pre-crime law. Obama put in the building, baby. You know what I'm saying? Hold on, y'all. Okay. Y'all want me to take y'all back to L.A. real quick? So y'all can find out about, finish up with your Nipsey Hussle and them niggas on that pre-crime law bill. That's why they killed that nigga. I'm fucking drained. Felt like I'd been goddamn driving for goddamn 10 hours, and I just pulled up in the driveway. I ain't reading that shit no more. Done. Now, listen, though. The pre-crime law is also in Oklahoma. They're using algorithms Would you, this is from KLF/law.com. It's in Oklahoma. This article came out earlier this year. Police in Oklahoma are using algorithms to predict your behavior. Shall I? Now, we went to L.A., now Chicago, and then Chicago, and now Oklahoma. Shall I tell you about Oklahoma? Predict a fucking minority report they got out. If Oklahoma police pulled you over in recent years, it may not be because you're a bad driver. Or maybe you've noticed more police cars in your neighborhood. That may not be because more crimes are occurring. Police in your community could be using big data tools to identify hot spots and predict crime before it occurs. Predictive policing, also called intelligence-led policing, is one of the trendiest technologies in law enforcement today. Authorities say it's revolutionizing public safety. A growing chorus of critics, even those who once supported predictive policing, worry now that the computer algorithm designed to predict future crimes are being built on decades of junk data and entrenched human biases. Law enforcement agencies across the nation, including Oklahoma, are contracting with private companies to analyze sprawling government databases stuffed not just with details about serious offenders, but also oceans of other bits of information about everyday people. Powerful analytic software then generates lists of high-risk people and neighborhoods. Law enforcement and the courts have excitedly embraced these innovations, but do they actually improve public safety? From patrols to passwords, police once gathered intelligence by working sources and talking to residents, business owners, and local church leaders. Today, community patrols are being replaced by computer-driven research, vast databases, and powerful surveillance devices. Police in Tulsa launched citywide crime suites in 2017 to curb violent crime by targeting dozens of people with arrest and warrants. Despite the large dragnet, the operation only seized 4 pounds each of marijuana and methamphetamines. You didn't get shit. No matter. Tulsa Police Chief told the media the suites were the first of many such planned operations and part of his department focused on intelligence-led policing, according to the Tulsa World. When machines learn bias. Y'all got to study this shit. You ain't got to. But pre-crime babies, minority report, it's here. It's here. Some of us are the dumbasses, though. Meaning, we stupid. We don't know what the fuck we be talking about. And here the fuck it is. See, when that bitch nigga was president, 8, 9, 10. 2 years later, he put, probably 8 or 9, he put the pre-crime law bill. In the place. And here we are, 2021. It's all over the fucking United States as well as the fucking world. Minority Report. Who they going after, self-guided? What does the name of the movie say? The title of the movie is Minority. It's targeting minorities. The report is on minorities. The Minority Report, motherfucker. Minority. So now we're watching it. L.A., they targeted all them niggas that was fucking with, what's his name, Nipsey, on that area, in that area, in that city. Nipsey did an interview in 2013, said the police would just jump out, ask us our names, want our Social Security numbers, our phone numbers, and our addresses, and left, took that shit, throwing that shit right into the algorithm. feed that shit to them. That's 2013, baby. You had a black-ass president that did this shit to you niggas, that let them motherfucking run rampant. You ain't paying attention looking at his old dick-slanging-ass wife and listen to this nigga goddamn jack your fucking ear off with some goddamn Al Green acapella and shit, and you miss what this fuck nigga was goddamn doing. Unless you was tuning in to WGAG Radio for the past 13 fucking years. And here we are now. Look at this shit. Look at this shit. There it is right there. There it is right there, baby. There it is. There it is. That's it right there. That's a motherfucker, man. It's here. It's here, shouting. Now, that's Oklahoma. Got another one, high-tech surveillance amplifies police bias and overreach. This is in Minneapolis. This is a decade of big data policing, pre-crime, the dangers of high-tech surveillance, all types of shit. That's on the conversion.com. Y'all need some new websites to go on instead of Facebook.com and shit like that. This is a motherfucker, man. You have another one, OPED. This is citylimits.org. Predictive policing should scare you. Ain't nobody reading this shit. Now, they gave a heads up in 2015. Why New York Police Department's predictive policing should scare you. It's here. Been here. Right under your fucking nose. Talk about it. Move on. Bring it back up. Obama pre-crime law. Minority report. Here it is. Been there the whole fucking time. Rappers ain't rapping about it. Black radio goddamn retarded ass Breakfast Club ain't talking about it. You got millions of niggas looking at you. But you are told not to inform you, these fucking niggas. I'm telling you, you want to inform a nigga when you bring up goddamn, you know, what they bring politicians on to their fucking show. To get niggas to fall for them motherfuckers. They don't know. Ain't telling niggas nothing. You hear me? Ain't telling Negroes nothing. I can't listen to a nigga ain't telling me something. You know what I'm saying? I cannot listen to a nigga, 3-4 niggas. If it take 3-4 niggas to talk on the radio show, you know you ain't saying shit. You ain't got nothing. You know what I'm talking about? You ain't got nothing. Ain't nothing in that head of yours. Well, you got China, Russia. Nope, my bad. The root of the surveillance problem began with Western government and Western corporations, not Russia, not China, not Korea. New data paints a detailed picture of the ways Western companies are selling cyber weapons and surveillance technology to NATO's enemy. You got more and more of that shit. More and more. It's a lot. It's a lot, baby. Boy, here's another one. What the data say about police brutality and racial bias and which reforms might work. I'm not clicking on that fucking reform. All right. Now, Donna Colleone posted from the WHO International site. Y'all know who WHO is, World Health Organization. Boys and girls. Number 3, and I'll read it. if you don't get your kids out of school. An implied consent process by which parents are informed of imminent vaccinations through social mobilization and communication, sometimes including letters directly addressed to the parents. Subsequently, the physical presence of the child or adolescent with or without an accompanying parent at the vaccination session is considered to imply consent. Did y'all hear that? With or without, they're basically saying, for some of y'all can't understand that shit, the moment you drop your children off at school, that's you giving consent. They can do whatever they want to do with the motherfucker. This practice is based on the opt-out principle, and parents who do not consent to vaccinations are expected implicitly to take steps to ensure that their child or adolescent does not participate in the vaccination session. This may include not letting the child or adolescents attend school on a vaccination day if vaccine delivery occurs through school, where they do not tell your dumb ass. They're lying. They're fucking lying. One day, y'all gonna wake up and realize your children are not your children. If you had them in an institution coming out the pussy, and if you took the paper, signed their life over to the institution, called a birth certificate and a Social Security, they're not yours. They're not yours at all. You can make them yours by pulling them out the institution. But as long as they stay in that bitch, they theirs. Now, Seth Gallagher, what you got, baby? Y'all don't recall the immunization shots back in the 70s? I know, Seth got it, of, as a matter of fact, a chick commented on Don Page. And it was El Rojo. And she said, I remember in the 70s, in the grade school, they were giving us vax, a.k.a. booster shots. In some states, they were offering children money to get the vax. Not sure if they even need parents' consent. So, yes, parents need to pay attention. That was based on that. Pay attention, that ain't what I said. I said, get your fucking kids out there, shit. Pay attention to what? You ain't even in there. Yeah, somewhere the fuck else where your children in the building, some goddamn way. How the fuck pay attention to what if your ass ain't there keeping an eye on your own fucking kids? Fuck that fucking, I don't know why people are talking about, so yes, parents need to, bitch, parents need to goddamn be right there with their children. Since they call themselves that, pay rent. And what they call themselves, pay rent. And then what they call them, pay rent. So, yeah, but I don't remember any of that shit, Self got it. You know what I'm saying? I don't remember that shit happening. All I remember is in one situation, I was in third grade, went to a predominant, I was in a predominantly Caucasian school, and all of us had to get out of the classroom and stand in line in the hallway. And motherfuckers with gloves on and a goddamn popsicle stick in their fucking hand was going through with the popsicle stick children hair. And I was so afraid. I was so afraid that, 'cause during that time I was a child supermodel. So I had Bronner Brothers hair weave in my hair. And I was so afraid that when this woman take this popsicle stick with her goddamn gloves on in my hair, you know, because my mama told me, don't tell nobody, this ain't my hair. they will find out that I'm a little girl wearing goddamn extensions and shit in third grade. So, hello, yes, we are. So interesting enough, what I tell you, I went to a predominantly white school, boys and girls. So when the lady finally got to me, She told me to step out of line and went to the next white child. That's the only thing I remember ever happening without my parents' permission, is that they told us all to come out. And I didn't know what it was. I never knew what the fuck. I'm like, I don't know, second or third grade. Like, goddamn, they taking a popsicle stick, putting it in these goddamn, putting it in, and I didn't see black and white at that time when I was little. I'm so glad I see it now. You know, I was like, damn, what the fuck? Why they rubbing a popsicle stick through everybody's hair, and I'm in line and shit, and the big cat to my ass. I'm only scared that the bitch gonna find out, goddamn, I got weave in my fucking hair. That bitch was like, you step out of line. She never touched my fucking head. Then, of course, by the time I'm 12 years old, got a hold to the dog book, The Sons of Canaan, written by Dr. Malachi Z. York at 12. I said, aha, oh, that's why that lady told me she ain't had to put no popsicle stick in my goddamn head. I ain't no goddamn dog. Oh, wee. Not an animal. So, Started reading more and more about melanin enriched motherfuckers and the transparent pink people. Self got it. I never knew there was a difference, but it all makes sense. When the lady pulled me out of line, she didn't check me for ticks, lights. That's a big difference right there. That is one of the biggest difference that changed my life forever. You hear me? Changed my life forever, changed my mentality forever. That's why it's important you give your children the dog book and the Sons of Canaan at least at 12 years old, so they'll know. They'll know, don't lay with them motherfuckers. And if, in fact, they know and still choose to lay with them, then that's because at least they know. That's important. But to go in some shit and not know that that's a goddamn fucking animal you in love with, you like, you want to spend the rest of your fucking life with, to not know that, to not know what it is detrimental. To not know what it is. Remember, knowledge, you will perish for a lack of it. So will your children if you don't give it to them. It's one thing knowing. It's another thing not knowing. So I knew. I fucking knew. Hey, make your confidence get boosted, don't it? Your confidence gets boosted. I'm sorry, still trying to figure out why goddamn niggas walking around this bitch with low self-esteem. Read that goddamn dog book in the Sons of Canaan, motherfucker. Your self-esteem will goddamn rise up. It'll stay harder than your dick will, I tell you that much. All right, anyway. Well, look here, boys and girls. I got to get up out of here. I ain't gonna talk about it now, goddamn it. But look here. Oh man, I got one more. I gotta give you Biden before I get up out of here. And y'all get ready for hot damn politics tonight at 9. But you got a few things going on around this bitch. You got Matthew McConaughey. Listen, this nigga is fully vaccinated, but he refused to give his children the COVID-19 mRNA shots to his children. He refused to do that shit. So he drinks plenty of alcohol. He takes a lot of shots. but he don't want his children. Kind of like a parent that does drugs, but don't want their children to do drugs. Yeah. So I said this shit too with this COVID, with this shit for the babies. I said, man, when it was only dealing with old people, the COVID, when it was then, they dropped the age to motherfuckers 45 and up, then dropped the age to 21 and up, then dropped it to 18 and up. Nobody said nothing. So everybody from 18 and up, they have no problem with whatever they're saying about your age group. But as soon as they mention children 5 to 11 and youngest goddamn 2 years old now, everybody don't woke the fuck. What the fuck? You give it to the fucking kids? You're not supposed to give it to the fucking children. Like as if it's a goddamn drug. Like it's alcohol. All the adults was okay with this vaccine until they start saying, oh, your children next, motherfucker. All the adults was okay with having sex till they started doing that shit in the schools, giving it to goddamn four-year-olds and teaching them about sex. Oh, not my kids. We can fuck. We can get a million shots. But you are not finna get that shit to our children. Show how fucked up adults are, right? You could tell adults are the most dumbest motherfuckers on the planet. That's why it's so easy to get them and to get them to turn over their fucking kids. Fucking adults. They can keep their fucked up lifestyle, but you can't bring that shit to my children. Now, remember I told y'all about the Supreme Court? You know what I'm saying? Remember I told you about the Supreme Court said, hell no, it's unconstitutional what Biden is doing and shit, trying to do that vaccine mandate and shit. But remember that? I'll tell you what Biden said after that. Biden said, I don't give a fuck what the goddamn Supreme Court said. Every last one of you businesses, you need to proceed with the vaccine mandates. Fuck the appeals court. Goddamn it. I swear I like this nigga, even though this is a quote from this motherfucker because he ain't really talking. But nigga said, I don't give a fuck. Fuck the goddamn Supreme Court. We not in a goddamn constitution. We in a corporation. This is United States of America Corporation, Jack. That nigga said that shit. Let me see. Nah, some chick speaking for his ass, though. You know Biden don't talk. Yeah. So, remember they were supposed to respond it Monday, right? They supposed to file a response on Monday. So you got you a little White House Deputy Press Secretary named Corinne Jean Pierre. I don't even believe that's that bitch real name. But she told reporters that people should not wait. They should continue to move forward and make sure they're getting their workplace vaccinated. So she's speaking for who you call your president. Even though Biden ain't president and Biden can't talk. Everybody's speaking for this nigga. So on Saturday, you already know, I just told y'all that the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals issued a temporary stay of the mandates. And so again, this Biden fake-ass administration, it was supposed to, you know, file a response Monday, November 8th. So in this response Monday, the administration asked the court to lift the pause and dismiss the company's objection as premature, given that the deadlines of vaccinations and testing are not until January. So Biden administration claimed the pausing the vaccine mandates would likely cost dozens or even hundreds of lives per day. Dozens gonna die. Hundreds gonna die. 25 Republican governors rushed to file petition last week to block the mandates in their states after OSHA, remember I told you about OSHA, for private companies, their guidelines for private companies that do business with the federal government. And companies with 100 or more employees must require COVID-19. This is from their government mandate. But, yeah, so they're trying to, yeah. So, anyway, but it's actually Biden, it's some bitch that's pretending she Biden administration. Basically saying, no, just y'all just keep going on with it. You just please, bye. 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 Ooh. 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 Ooh, wait a minute. Did y'all know that Don Lemon have a rape accuser? Wait a minute. I'm going to leave in a minute. Give me 2 more seconds. Let me tell you this one. Did y'all know anything about Don Lemon? Got a rape accuser. Anybody? Turns down 3 settlement offers. What the fuck? And it's a white man. Don Lemon's rape accuser reportedly turned down 3 settlements. You know, damn well ain't no nigga going around raping white men. Don Lemon's rape accuser, Dustin Heiss, reportedly turned down 3 settlement offers, including a recent offer of $500,000. On Monday, he appeared on the Megyn Kelly show, where he claimed the openly gay news anchor offered to pay him $500,000 to remain silent. His claims he was grouped. A grope, how do you say that shit, by Don Lemon at Merce Backstreet Tavern in July 2018. He filed a lawsuit against Lemon in a Suffolk County court in 2019. The lawsuit is still pending. Heiss, a white man, says he turned down the settlement offers because he's not after Lemon's money. Instead, he wants peace and an admission of guilt or an apology after allegedly being violated by the CNN newsroom live host. Heiss stopped short of calling Lemon an unrepentant narcissist who drunkenly fondles men in bars, in gay bars. He'd go in that bitch and just walk around and pinch niggas' men penises as he walked through the bar. This isn't about me trying to get money. At this point, I just want my life back. I don't see any kind of settlement happening without an admission of guilt or an apology, but I seriously doubt his ego and pride that's going to happen. Y'all believe Don Lemon went around grabbing goddamn white men's penises? Y'all honestly believe this nigga done got down? You think this nigga done went to a bar and just started groping this goddamn white man? Said, come on home. What's wrong with you? What's wrong with your dick? Can't get it up. Get here. We in public. Stop touching my dick. Anyway, I can't do it. All right, y'all. Man of the hour starting early. Love y'all. Y'all have an awarding day. Don't forget the pre-crime law minority report has been out, been here since Obama, and it's been all over this bitch in California, L.A. They used it on your boy Nipsey, Chicago, Oklahoma, all over this place, the pre-crime law bill. So they already have the minority report set. That's my time. I'm about this bitch. That ain't my time, but I got to go. Y'all have an awarding day, and Man of the Hour is up next. And don't forget Hot Damn Politics tonight at 9 p.m. WGAG Radio. Peace.